I call this regular meeting of the Board of Supervisors of Fluvana County to order. We will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
Flag on the wall.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands,
and to the republic which is
liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much. Alrighty, ladies, do we have an adoption of the agenda?
So moved.
Mr. Chair, I just want to add one thing. We just forgot this, and we've had it on every agenda so far. Under unfinished business, we just had local allocations of CARES funds. It's just some discussion points to add under number 10, unfinished business.
Okay. Ms. Booker, do we have a second?
I second.
We have a motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Ms. Booker. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 3-0-2 with Mr. O'Brien and Mr. Weaver absent. County Administrator's report.
Yep, Mr. Chair, thank you. I just got a few things to report on. So I know this was asked before, kind of what Fluvana's current COVID cases are. So as of today, Fluvana County has a total of 204 cases, 33 hospitalizations, and 9 fatalities. If you look on the slide here, you know, I've been monitoring this. I've been keeping track daily. I've been on a rotary meeting every week for the past 3 months. So I just kind of monitor what some of the weekly numbers are and what the weekly increases are. So this goes back to May 26 until current. On this chart, the numbers in yellow, those were 2 weeks where we didn't have a meeting. So what I did, I took a 2 weeks meeting and I just split it up. So you can see here that through this whole entire period, it's been about a 7.4% average increase in cases. So like I said, you know, currently we've been going up a little bit more per week. We've been probably around on average the dozen cases per week. But our hospitalizations or fatalities haven't gone up, I think, in the last week or two. Maybe hospitalizations went up one in a prior week, but they haven't in the last week. So that's all I really have for COVID cases and kind of where Fluvana stands. I don't have a breakout of where the numbers are between race, ethnicity, or anything like that. I think we would probably have to get with VDH to get more specific
and
info.
They're not breaking down by the county level for race and ethnicity because it would be difficult to maintain privacy at that level. So they do it by their district.
Okay.
All right, sort of real quick, I just
sure.
you answered what I was getting ready to ask you to do. But you said it's been one hospitalization lately?
There's been, not this past week, but the previous week, we had one hospitalization increase. So we're at 33 hospitalizations.
That was what I was getting at. Like, pick a date in the middle where the numbers start to rise. Case numbers are going up, but not hospitalizations and not deaths.
Correct. Fatalities have stayed level. Hospitalizations, like I said, probably, if I had to guess, and I could go back and look because I have this information, they've probably increased maybe 5 in the past month, or 2 months.
When the last death was, I'd like to know when the last death was.
I think it was about 3 weeks ago.
Three weeks ago, and then before that,
it was a good ways, but yes.
Okay.
I can pull that information out. I can pull that out for the board at the next meeting. And regarding, so at the last board meeting, the supervisors approved, for one, they made a motion to get the COVID-wise app going. County staff has initiated getting that all on county phones. We also, the board made a motion to appropriate $5,000 towards the COVID-wise app campaign. Ms. Harris has been looking at lots of different options between getting information for Fluvanna Review, for a full-page color ad for 1 week, and then looking at some additional weekly options, looking at the rural Virginia, looking at banners. And there's also something through the post office where you could send a mailer to every household in the zip codes that are within Fluvanna County. The cost for that's probably going to be probably right around maybe $2,000 to $3,000 for that.
Yeah, we're not entirely sure because I haven't received an estimate from the printers, and we have to go through one that's associated with this Every Door direct mailing. I requested it, but I haven't received it yet. So I requested an estimate for 12,000 postcards.
But anyway, the $5,000 that the board approved, we will certainly be able to utilize that. And is there anything else? Like I said, so we got the Fluvanna Review, Rural Virginia, we got potential radio spots, we got banners, we got postcard mailers going to every household. Is there anything else that the board would like to see us do? I mean, as we're trying to fit within this dollar amount?
Well, I don't know that it's something the board would do, but I think that to the degree that businesses can encourage folks to use the COVID-Wise app, whether it's with a small discount or something along those lines, that would be a positive. And folks show up and you get 50 cents off your coffee because you have a COVID-Wise app on it, that would be awesome. I think that's probably something you can drive through the Chamber of Commerce. To me, I mean, even if the county threw in $1,000 to help subsidize that, that would certainly be something that we could do. I mean, I think trying to encourage as many people to use that app as possible is critical.
I talked about it with the teachers today.
Yeah, and like I said, I think if we can get the mailer going to every household in the county, I mean, that's one way that you're, you know, now some people may just say.
And doing the zip codes, you'll get also people in Louisville.
You would get some of the peripheries of some of the other counties
so
as well.
That's fine. I mean, so, that's not a bad thing.
Well, and they probably are coming into our county at some point anyway, if
absolutely.
They're that close.
Absolutely.
So anyway, that's an update on the COVID-Wise app. Another update, so the registrar's office, we've been working very furiously to get her situated. So we are going to be moving the registrar's new location starting tomorrow. So she will be closed, the registrar's office will be closed tomorrow for Thursday and Friday of this week. Public Works is going to be at Ms. Pace's office tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. to start moving desk equipment. She's got, you know, a lot of boxes already over there. You know, obviously this move was precipitated by the no excuse early voting legislation that went into effect July 1. We've got a good location, and there's been a lot of good comments about, you know, they're glad that they're moving in that space. So again, Thursday and Friday she'll be closed. On the website and on the news and stuff, there is a press release going out about it. Anyone that wants to inquire about anything voting related can contact the State Department of Elections on Thursday and Friday. But she'll be open on Monday, back to normal business hours. We're working on getting a sign for above the suite there on the building like all the others. We're also doing probably about 3 window clings on some of the front spaces and kind of around the side, just so there's a lot of visibility that this is the Fluvanna County Registrar's office.
I think we could probably get some placards as well too, you know, voter registration available at, you know, Jefferson Center. I think we should advertise it as well too, because there's a lot of confusion. You know, a lot of people don't know that they can vote early with no excuse. Obviously with all the comments that are happening right now in terms of mail-in ballots and those kinds of things. Some people might feel a lot more comfortable having the flexibility to come in and vote at the registrar's office. So to the degree that we advertise and promote that, I think that's to the benefit of the community. So I would certainly encourage that we run weekly ads that say, you know, we are open to take your vote right
now. Yeah. Yeah, like I said, I think the date for them to start taking in person is the 8th, September 18th in this new location.
And speaking of that, I mean, I know that's not the registrar's responsibility, but with regard to census taking, could we coordinate any of that with census taking, because obviously census taking is due to end in the next month.
So could we coordinate to have a census taker kind of right by there?
Yeah.
Check. I'm in a webinar on Friday.
Yeah, we'll check into that.
I mean, it's I guess we're cutting a month off census taking, I don't know what the current numbers are for Bluvanna County, but certainly, you know, the more that participate, the more up we are.
For my next call report, I'll have census information to show where we are. The one thing I can tell you is I've looked, it was probably been 2-3 weeks ago. Bluvanna County was above and beyond a lot of the other localities in the Commonwealth for already filling out your census. I think we were in the over 70% range.
Well,
and for the longest time, we were probably in the top 10 in the state for percentage.
Is that the online stuff?
Yes.
Yeah. The self-response.
Yeah, self-response.
I'll tell you
so,
just a second.
But like I said, anyway, she'll be moving, but Monday she'll be up and running, and you know it'll probably be a few hiccups as we transition. But like I said, I
would certainly think that the CARES funding could apply towards the advertising of the registrar's change as well.
For the CARES funding, I don't believe we can do CARES funding, but there may be some money that she gets from the state regarding the early voting.
Yes, she does get some money for early voting. The CARES funding isn't really applicable because we already were doing this for early voting.
We made this decision before COVID.
Well, it's not even a county.
Right. But I'm saying this was in the process before COVID.
See, and that's some of the things. There's lots of discussion right now about what's CARES eligible, what's just early voting. What's something that every locality would be doing because of the early voting. The registrar's office is actually getting her own CARES funding too, specific to her office for things as well. And I think she's getting.
For example, we did that in mail. There's no reason we couldn't, you know, incorporate that same information in that mail.
Oh yeah, we could. Yeah, we could easily put a big double mailer out, putting the information.
One thing about it is, if you put too much, people
go. No, I know. That's
just simple, yeah.
Simple.
Yeah.
Hey, you can vote early, rules of change.
Yep. Yep.
You know, no excuse for voting.
I've had about 3 calls thus far from people. So, what can I do? How do I do it?
Also,
I
have to explain.
The early voting is now 45 days.
Like, and first or second.
They got this for all of us at the schools.
It's all like that.
Yeah.
All right.
This is Mosnell, Mr. Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
Does Ms. Pace have enough staff for what she has to do? I don't know if we have anything to do with that or not. Is she backed up enough if someone should get the COVID-19 and have to be quarantined? Does she have trained people that could move into that person's spot?
So, Ms. Booker, to answer your question, honestly, from Ms. Pace's standpoint, she'll probably say no, I would imagine. Now, I've talked to her. Actually, I had a conversation with her today regarding staffing. Now, she is, as I said, she is getting her own CARES funding, so she can use CARES funding for staffing. So we are going to talk. I'll get with finance, and I'll get with HR about what we can do for staffing for her with her CARES funding. To get some additional personnel in her office.
Okay, thank you. That's what I wanted to hear.
Yep.
Thank you.
Just spotlight on business. We have a new business that opened up at the Jefferson Center, the same center where the registrar's office is. Amo Gelato? Amo Gelato Cafe, they opened up. So the owners of Blue 53 and Sal's, that family also opened up this business. They opened up July 20th. Again, located at the Jefferson Center, open every day from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. And they have absolutely great desserts. Been there a few times already. And then just again, you know, county information for anyone that wants to pull up the county admin report. These are the different avenues that they can get electronic information. And just some of your upcoming meetings, September 2nd at 4 p.m. We have a regular meeting here September 19th at 7 p.m. we have a regular meeting here, and then October 6th at 4 p.m. we have a regular meeting here at the library as well. I'd be happy to answer any questions if the board has any.
Do we have any questions for Mr. Dahl?
I don't. Thank you, Ms. Dahl.
Thanks, sir. All righty. Hearing none, I will now open the first round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board should keep their comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak to the board at this time? And I see that we have a caller on the line. Hello? Do we have a caller for public comment? Starting to sound like you might have an employee that's on there that we just don't know the phone number to. Can I say the phone number over the...
Can you say the last three?
The last three are 475.
Last three numbers are 475.
You're unmuted.
Okay.
Let me just make sure. I can see. No, I don't know.
If your number ends in 475, you are up for public comment. Okay, hearing none. Are there any others, Ms. Harris?
Nope.
Okay, I will now close the first round of public comment. If you were trying to get through to us, your last four digits for 475, please call back for the second round of public comment. All righty, we'll move forward with public hearings. First up is AFD 1902, Mr. Patsy P. Griffin, addition to the Carysbrook Agricultural Forestal District. Mr. Robinson.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board.
Mr. Robinson, just let me know when you want me to go to the next slide.
Okay. This is a request to add property to an agricultural forestal district, and this request has been submitted from Patsy Griffin. The application proposes a request to add three parcels, 41A45, 45B, and 51A128A. All of the parcels together total 136.664 acres. The applicant currently has one of her parcels. She has a total of four, and she has one of them currently enrolled in the Carysbrook District. She's asking to add those remaining three. The Carysbrook District is currently over 1,500 acres and was renewed in August of 2019. At that time, there were 43 parcels included in the renewal. This is a map showing the location of the subject three parcels in red on the screen, and then the Carysbrook District in the hatched green area. And this is the zoning of the subject property in the area, all zone A1. And this is an aerial imagery of the property showing that the subject parcels and most of the area is forested and wooded properties that have not been developed. So these are the criteria on the screen that a request to add property to the forestal district has to be reviewed in accordance with. I'm not going to read each one, but the staff report has gone through each one of those criteria in a little bit more detail. So the AFD committee met on February 4th of this year and recommended approval of this request 5-0. And subsequently, the planning commission met on July the 14th and held a public hearing. At that meeting, they recommended approval 5-0. There were no citizens spoke on the hearing. So to conclude, this is a request to add parcels into an existing agriculture forestal district. Two of the subject parcels were formerly part of the Carysbrook District, and this request appears to meet all of the county code requirements. The applicant was not able to be present this evening, but I can attempt to answer any other questions you might have.
Are there any questions for Mr. Robinson?
No.
Okay, hearing none, I will now open the public hearing. Please keep your comments to 3 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time? What are the last three digits, Mrs. Harris?
71475.
475.
475. If your phone number ends in 475. Is there anyone? 475, are you there to speak on the behalf of the public hearing?
I just talked to them.
Anything? All right, 475, give you one more chance. Your last three digits are 475.
I'm gonna mute them in the corner and call them.
Okay. If your last three digits are 475, Ms. Harris is attempting to call you.
Nope.
All right. I apologize if you're trying to talk, but we're unable to hear you, so we're going to have to move forward. Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one else, I'll now close the public hearing. All right. With no one else wishing to speak, are there any questions or comments from your board?
No, but I'll make a motion.
Okay, go ahead.
I move to approve the proposed addition of tax map parcels 41A45, 41A45B, and 51A128A, totaling 136.664 acres to the Carysbrook Agricultural and Forest District.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, motion's been made by Ms. Zeger. Ma'am? Motion's been made by Ms. Zeger and seconded by Mr. O'Brien. Ms. Zeger?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Okay. You're real low on that, Ms. Booker, but we heard you. Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0 with Mr. Weaver being absent.
Okay.
There you go. Next is B, AFD 1903. Allison and Ronald Unterstall, addition to Glen Arvin Farm. Mr. Robinson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this is another request to add property to an agricultural forestal district submitted from Allison and Ronald Unterstall. Their two properties are identified as tax map 60A21 and 60A21D. Together they are 140.65 acres. They were previously a part of the Riverside Agricultural Forestal District, which was terminated in 2012. So the applicant is asking to add them into the Glen Arvin Farm AFD, which currently is over 1,700 acres. This district was renewed in January of this year, and at that time there were six parcels included. This is the location of the subject parcels in red and the Glen Arvin Farm District in the hatch green. And you can see the proximity of the county boundary and the James River. And here again, the zoning of the subject property in the area is A1, agricultural. And same scenario, a lot of the properties in the area are forested or wooded and undeveloped. And these are the criteria that in a request for an addition to an agricultural forestal district has to be evaluated against. These criteria are outlined in the staff report. The AFD committee met on March the 9th, 2020, and at that meeting they recommended approval of this request 5-0. And the Planning Commission met on July 14th, held their public hearing, and at that meeting they recommended approval of this request 5-0. There were no citizen comments received. So to conclude, this is a request to add property into an existing agricultural forestal district. The subject properties were formerly part of an AFD. And this request appears to meet all of the county code requirements. And as with the last application, the applicant was not was unable to be present this evening. I can attempt to answer any questions you might have.
Are there any questions from the board?
I guess the only question I have is, if it happened in 2012 when they came out of the Riverside District, why did it take them so long to go to this district?
The renewals that were done for the Glen Arm Farm generated some interest. One of the neighbors who had to renew talked to this gentleman, and that triggered the application.
Okay. And they fall within that limits in terms of the story.
All right, is there any other questions? Hearing none, I will now move forward with the public hearing. Keep your comments to 3 minutes. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time? Ms. Harris is shaking her head no, so I will now close the public hearing. Are there any comments or questions from the board? Ms. Booker, this is in your district. Would you like to make this motion?
Okay, I move to approve the proposed addition of tax map parcels 6821 and 6821D, totaling 140 acres, 0.65, to the Glenarole Farm Agricultural and Forestry District.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's been made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. Ms. Seeger?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. Mr. Weaver's absent. We'll now move forward with our action matters. Tab C, FCPS, FY21 CARES Act Budget Transfer. Ms. Pagano.
Good evening. I have a couple items for you tonight. Both of them are with the CARES Act. This is a request from the schools for $45,990. That's to cover buying 200 Verizon hotspots in the first 4 months of the service for that. They originally requested 12 months, but we can't pay up front for the entire 12 months. We can only pay through December 20th, so we will be paying through the end of the year. And then we've discussed this with the schools, and they will take care of the rest of the cost. Chantel is also planning on donating an additional 50 hotspots, which would give the schools a total of 250 hotspots. These will be distributed among teachers and students for those that either can't afford internet service or don't have accessibility to internet service, but do have accessibility to cellular service so that they can do distance learning and to allow staff to do distance teaching and work. Do you have any questions? I believe Ms. Gillum is on the line.
Yeah, Ms. Gillum, I think Ms. Gillum and Mr. Winkler are on there. And really, if you just look at what their request is, we can pay for the upfront hardware cost, but it's the 12-month data plan. We can only pay through December 30th, so
our hands are tied with the care funding.
Correct. Yeah. Out of that $47,000, we can only pay, I think, what was it, was it 4 months?
Just 4 months.
The first 4 months, because you can't prepay.
Yeah, unless the Treasury changes something at this point.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mr. Winkler, did you have a question about that?
Has it unmuted?
Ms. Gillum.
Ms. Gillum?
I've requested they both unmute, and neither has.
Mr. Winkler, Ms. Gillum, will you all unmute for us? Mr. Winkler's probably tired of talking to me because he came to speak to us in those days this afternoon.
Okay.
I'm sure that they understand what's going on.
Well, like I said, they sent this literally, it was probably like a day or two after the last board meeting, and once we got this, we told them that, look, we just can't, out of the CARES funding, we can't pay for the full annual amount.
Same thing we talked about with the bill.
Yep.
You know, mm-hmm. Because we have to do something by December.
Yep.
Let's see if they can get in now.
Only question I would have is, why is the school's CARES funding not being used for this?
Because they
don't have any.
They used all theirs for technology,
they
and then
they had some.
Are they?
They had some, but it's already been
did
spent.
Did they get a second round?
No, they did not. They received $298,000 the first time, and they used that for Chromebooks and some various other technology things to give to the children to take home. There are some grants they said they could apply for, which they're working on, but again, those aren't guaranteed, and the time frame's not really working.
What's the reason they didn't get a second round of CARES funding?
They didn't give any schools a second round of CARES funding.
No. So, Ms. Gillum, Mr. Winkler on yet?
They're there, but they, Mr. Winkler?
Well, and I guess the only other comment I would have is thank you to Chantel for donating for an additional 50 on spots.
I sent them a note that they could both unmute themselves.
Well, I just said it, and I know they can hear me.
Mr. Sheridan?
Hey! What do you say, partner?
I'm sorry, I could hear some questions earlier. I was on dial-in. I'm glad to address any questions.
We were just talking about, instead of doing the 77,000 requests for 12 months, we can only spend money up until December the 20th. So,
30th.
Understood. We had talked to either Mariana or Mr. Dahl regarding that issue previously. Any support that you can provide would be greatly appreciated.
All righty. Any questions or comments from the board? Okay. Do we have a motion?
I move that the board of supervisors approved by the transfer of $45,990 from the FY21 CARES Act.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Eager. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. We'll now move forward with Ted.
Thank you all. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Get some rest.
Mr. Chairman. Could I note for there's an issue about Mr. O'Brien? Would you please speak up? You're being muffled by the mask, people have told me that they had trouble hearing you.
Sure,
if you speak up, that would be helpful.
Glad to do so.
All right, D, FY21 CARES Act budget transfer, Ms. McGuire.
I'm here again to ask for some more CARES money, and tonight I'm asking for a total of $31,300, and this is for some site improvements and furniture and fixtures. We're asking for $4,400 to install a plexiglass window at the registrar's new location, very similar to what is in the Commissioner of Revenue's office and in the clerk's office, and that's just to provide some safety for both the public and the staff.
And let me just add, it's more than plexiglass, it's real glass. Just so
I'm
it's
gonna say.
No, it's solid glass.
Yeah.
Permanent.
The second amount that we're asking for under site improvements is $17,500. Oh, I'm sorry. In addition to the glass, they're also installing a door into the hallway to prevent public from just wandering into the back areas without being escorted in the back areas.
It's to provide a barrier from citizens coming into the new registrar's office to have access to the employees that are in the back section.
Same thing we've done with the other.
Correct.
Yes. And then the $17,500 is for the renovation of the planning area and the first floor of the administration building. Previously, staff was open to the public and there wasn't much to protect them from interaction. And so they are renovating that area to provide protection and health and safety protection for the staff and public again. And due to that renovation, the furniture that is currently in that area no longer fits in those spaces, so we will be buying new furniture to go in those two new spaces.
And it's not going to be, I don't think it's going to quite be $7,000. It'll probably be below that, but anyway, that's what we're requesting right at this moment.
And then the last amount, which is probably also a little high, but we didn't have exact quotes yet, is to replace furniture both here at the library and social services offices. They have cloth covered furniture for the public, and that's harder to disinfect and keep clean in between people coming in, so we're going to be replacing it with chairs that are probably vinyl covered that can easily be disinfected in between patrons and public using them.
And just one update, in your package, I think it said building, the 21-9 said building equipment repair and maintenance, but it's actually a site improvements line is what it is. But that's the only change. The amount hasn't changed, it's just the name where it's going.
Okay, I've got a question.
Yep.
Once this is done, is that when y'all will open up to the public?
That's, we are waiting for that to be done, and then that's kind of the last kind of linchpin to, you know, to kind of
fall into place.
Yes.
Okay. Anyone else?
And like I said, I don't want to guarantee you that at that point we want to see what's happening, but we are certainly, so for COVID, that is certainly something that we're trying to do. We're trying to get all these places that are public facing, that deal with the public on a consistent basis, to get some protective measures in there. And then once that's in place, then we can start looking at making our public spaces a little more available to the public and open to the public.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Hearing none, I ask for a motion.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
I have a question. All right, the budget that the motion that I'm looking at in tab D, that's the registrar's office?
No, D is the planning office, planning department.
Yeah, the registrar's office is E, Mrs.
Okay, and it doesn't say that. Yeah, but it doesn't say that in the motion. I move the board to approve a transfer of 33.
Well, there's
Mrs. It doesn't say where. I mean, it's in the description, but it's
so, Mrs. Booker, there's two motions coming up. Tab D is kind of using CARES funds to do some updates to some public-facing areas, some of it being planning and building. There is a little section in the registrar's office that we can utilize CARES funds for, and then there's some furniture. Under tab E, that is the Board of Supervisors contingency budget transfer. That's a non-CARES Act transfer that we'll be looking at for the next agenda item.
I understand that perfectly. I understand that, but it just, the motion itself is just open-ended. I mean, you have to go and look at the discussion to know what tab D is for.
Right. I guess it did. I guess
the plexiglass window. Building repair, but it's for what building?
So,
furniture and fixture, or what?
Yeah, Mrs. Booker, so because this is the CARES budget, there's a CARES budget, these funds don't go directly into, like, the registrar's budget or the public works budget or the county administrator's budget. It is its own defined budget to keep track of all the dollars that are spent. And with this being federal dollars, they are very meticulously tracked in this department, in this separate department, only for CARES funds. So we don't put it to, like, the registrar's budget.
I understand that, Eric. And, I'm not expressing myself very well, obviously. I wish Mr. Weaver would be there. He would really support what I'm saying. But anyway, if you all are satisfied, that's fine. I'm not going to belabor it, but
that's
fine.
Mrs.
But
Booker,
I'm not going to make
a mistake. No, I think I understand what you're
saying. I understand. Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. All right. Okay. Go back to the motion to we. That's what's not right. All right. Do I have a motion?
I move that the board is.
I move. Okay, go ahead, Tony.
No, please, Missy, you're going.
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve a transfer of $31,300 from the FY21 CARES Act contingency line to the CARES Act lines below. A, site improvements, $21,900. And B, furniture and fixtures, $9,400.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eager and seconded by Mr. O'Brien. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker? Ms. Booker? Okay. Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. We'll now move forward with E, FY21. Well, and let me just say this, Mr. Dahl, I think what Ms. Booker was saying is she would like to have seen everything broken down in the motion.
Yep.
Rather than just down at the bottom.
Yep, that's, I made a note for that.
Yeah, I'll do a much more detailed motion.
Yeah, we could say site improvements, CARES Act Registrar's Office, site improvements, building and plan.
I can make a much more detailed motion for next time.
FY21, Board of Supervisors.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. FY21, Board of Supervisors Contingency Budget Transfer, Registrar's Office Relocation, Ms. McGuire.
Mr. Dahl, do you want to start or do you want me to?
You move.
In previous meetings, we moved $20,000 from the Board of Supervisors Contingency line to facilitate the setup of the new Registrar's Office. Since they have started the build out and the installation of all the IT and electrical, it has been discovered that there was not quite enough to cover all of the expenses. So we're asking for an additional $2,400 to cover some electrical setup and another $3,000 for additional IT setup equipment and some connection expenses.
Yeah, to speak to the electrical, when we were there, Ms. Pace realized that in certain areas to set up a lot of her poll books and do a lot of setup to get ready for elections, there's more outlets needed. In one of the suites, there was an individual office. There wasn't some office switches in there, and there's just some additional outlets needed. So there was some additional electrical that needed to be done in both of those suites just to make it more practical for use. And then the IT, Andy, do you want to speak on the IT? It was just
what I had to. For the registrar's office?
Yeah.
Oh boy, got a new switch, access points, camera, firewall. And so far, one new laptop.
Yeah. So when we originally put some dollars in there, we thought what we had in there was adequate.
Oh, and there's the wiring, we had to rewire the whole, because it was two separate suites originally, and the wires did not cross over into one central location. So both suites had to come into one central location, and that's $177 a drop thereabouts, and it was about 35 drops, something like that. A little bit more than I expected because I had just rewired her old building, not realizing that this building is twice the size. I estimated off the old one. I just underestimated what it was going to be, so it ran over. That would cost a little bit more.
I almost wish we could get some money off the rent since we've done a whole lot of upgrades to the building.
Nope, that's the
thing. Any other questions? All right. Hearing none, do I have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a budget transfer of $5,400 from FY21 BOS contingency budget to A, FY21 facilities budget $2,400, B, FY21 information technology budget $3,000 for the registrar's office relocation.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Eager. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. Mr. Weaver's absent. F, Municode Intranet Implementation. Ms. Tolbert.
Good evening. Due to the emergency workplace safety standard, infectious disease prevention, the new CDC guidelines for mitigating exposure to the coronavirus, the county is required to provide training to staff regarding these new standards, the risk of exposure and mitigation efforts. This intranet site that we're proposing will provide staff with a private, secure online environment that is only accessible to county employees for the purpose of providing this training and tracking the completion.
Mm-hmm.
An alternative solution would require the procurement of a new separate software program, which would incur greater expense than we're asking for here, and it wouldn't be implemented in a timely manner to meet the OSHA's requirements. Because this does fill the need for a related COVID-19 expense, the initial expenses will be covered under the CARES Act. Future year costs will have to be budgeted in the HR budget and going forward. Any questions?
And there's just one change in the motion. We had set, it was a $7,200 there before, but as we said before, just like on the schools item, so this includes a one-time cost of $4,000 and then an annual fee of $3,200. Because we can't say we're taking a full year worth of annual fees using CARES fund, it reduced the $7,200 down to $5,100. We'll be able to cover that in existing budgets, I think, easily just due to the fact that there's going to be less less individuals going away on trainings and conventions and overnight stays and stuff
HR
like that.
HR indicated they'd be able to cover that under their training budget that they have.
All right. If I hear no questions, I will ask for a motion.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a budget transfer of $5,100 from FY21 CARES Act contingency line to FY21 CARES Act ADP supplies line.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Eager. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. Do we have motion number two?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve addendum number one between Savannah County and Munico to complete the internet implementation with a one-time cost of $4,000 and annual fees of $3,200 and further authorize the county administrator to execute the agreement subject as to approval as performed by the county attorney.
Do I have a second?
Mrs. Booker, do you want to do
second.
That?
Second.
Got a motion made by Mr. O'Brien.
Yeah,
second.
I did.
Seconded by Mrs. Booker. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. We'll now move forward with G. CRA Project Agreement Number 4, renovate the administration building basement. Ms. Stoller.
What's on?
Oh, never mind. There's a significant need for meeting space to allow for social distancing and public attendance for Board of Supervisors, Planning Commission, and other county meetings. Currently, the courts are not available for county meetings due to the backlog cases and COVID issues. It's unknown when or if the courts will become available again for any county meetings. Prior to today, the Board of Supervisors meetings were held in the Morris Room, which only allowed for 10 people to be present due to social distancing requirements. The library here is a good temporary option, but it's not going to be able to be used permanently. At the Board of Supervisors meeting on August 5th, the board voted to move forward with option one to renovate the administration building basement into a multi-purpose room to serve functions such as Board of Supervisor meetings. The task I'm bringing to you today is just for the A&E, the architectural and engineering part of this project.
And just also, too, as we move forward, we have Josh Bauer with Crabtree Warbon Associates, one of the architectural and engineering firms that the county has.
Yep, he's on the line if we have any questions.
Once we get into some of the, because we got some renderings of some of the building stuff.
So you see here, this is just an overlay of the building. What we have in store, we have planned at this point, everything is subject to change, to redo the area of the basement. The next page will give you a little bit closer look at that plan.
And Josh, can you hear us?
I can hear you just fine.
Do you wanna chime in a little bit here, and then we can.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Actually, let me go back to the last slide quick. One thing that's important is that we're actually looking to eliminate the blacktop area that is currently where the where the old access was to get to the overhead doors for when it was a fire department. And then also to add both a wood guardrail separating the Route 15, and then remove the connection from the upper parking lot to 15. It's not only is it unsafe, but it's also a stormwater issue. So what we're looking to do is on the upper parking lot add guardrail and then have a stair. Obviously, we'll still have parking up there, but then to add a stair that would then connect down to the lower area that you would then be able to enter in and have a separate entrance for the main room, which would then be in the basement. And so as we're looking here, you can see the sidewalk, a small vestibule that would allow you to have access into the main room. The meeting room will hold, which is the purple area. When we go into a non-COVID situation, we'll hold 77 occupants, plus the board of supervisors and staff in the front of the room. In a situation of trying to social distance, we feel that you could fit 40 occupants in the room and still be able to social distance in the space.
The one nice thing about this space too is if you see the blue conference area, it'll have some doors that would be allowed to be open. So if we needed overflow space, we could put additional space in there.
You just leave the doors from the firehouse.
Well, no, this is an add-on.
This is a bump.
Josh, you want to keep going?
So it's a very small addition. So it's around a 12-foot addition, which is both the yellow and the blue area. So where you're seeing the doors that Mr. Gall was just speaking of, they would have the ability to close. So that could be either a conference room utilized during the day or for an evening capacity, but then also those doors could fold out and expand beyond the 77 to fit close to 100 people into the meeting room. So what the goal of this space is to not only use it for board supervisor, planning commission, zoning hearing, but also in a daily space, because as Mr. Collier said earlier, is that we do not have a whole lot of meeting room space anywhere in the admin building. So over to your right hand side, you can see the gray areas. We'll both have both men's and women's toilet rooms off of the large meeting room space. And then to your left, we have a small set of stairs that goes up to a conference room. That ideally would be a room for executive session, other meetings that could happen in the evenings and meetings during the day. So with this overall design, we're creating this really three separate meeting room spaces and turning what is now currently just a storage room into functional space both during the day and in the evenings.
And this existing storage area, conference area, right now it's a file room, and there's some serious remediation that needs to take place in that building. And as we continue to keep all of our buildings, and the admin building is not necessarily going anywhere, this is just something that it's needed to do with this renovation, but it just also helps the long-term component of the building as well. So, like I said, there would still be some conditioned storage area, but then there's also a space for a board of supervisors closed session meeting area as well.
Could you point out the exits for me, please?
Yes, so Ms. Booker.
Exits, how do you leave that building? How many different exits are there for handicapped people?
For handicap accessibility, you really only have one place to leave, and that is going up the elevator up to, basically if you go take the elevator going up to the Morris room, going up by the Morris room, and you'd have to go out the front door of the Morris room. We had looked at making this more handicap accessible.
But maybe
I'm sorry, what's that, Ms. Booker?
I was just saying, if you can't get on the elevator, that's the only way you can get upstairs. Okay, I don't know.
Well, So Josh, do you want to talk about the access, making the sidewalk area accessible?
Yes, we did look at that as an option. The challenge is because there's about a 12-foot difference in height. Actually, if you can go back to the last slide, you can see it visually, is that there's about a 12-foot height difference between the upper level and the lower level. So, you know, we actually, in another project, did a similar ramp, and the cost of the ramp was about $175,000, because with the 12-foot ramp, we're looking at just shy of 160-foot, or I'm sorry, with the 12-foot difference between the upper-level parking and the entrance of the multi-purpose room, it's about a 160-foot long ramp, which our estimate is about $175,000. And, you know, as we discussed it during the, you know, the initial design meetings, we felt that it may not be the best use of county dollars to put that ramp in. So the good news for the county is that you can park in your existing accessible spaces, come into the building, and then be able to come down the elevator to the space in order to be able to meet accessibility. Physically enabled public would be able to park in the parking lots, come down the stairs and through the sidewalk into the vestibule.
So yes. So the truly only the only true handicap accessible space would be in the elevator.
I'm looking at the elevator right now. I've never been on it, but it, don't the doors to the elevator open up towards the front door? Or are they open? No. Up towards the hallway?
Yeah, it's on the other side of the hallway.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, I was sitting there myself. Like I said, I've never been on it. I just walked the stairs all.
Yeah, it opens up facing the Morris room.
Okay.
Yes, I mean, in a true emergency, someone could get out to the sidewalk area and get out of the building. That's not necessarily, but it, from a day-to-day standpoint, there would be stairs there, and they would not be able to get out up the stairs to the parking lot from that area. But
have to walk them all the way around everything.
Yes, in a true emergency, they could get out of the building, out of this area, but to get up to the parking lot, it's just not, it's a challenge because of the big drop that it is, and you know, we could certainly relook at that, or we can look at it in this or from another standpoint. That was just one of the challenges that we had.
What's the back area behind the sort of seating area where the board would sit?
Right back there. So one, you'd have some AV stuff set up. And then we had even talked about possibly putting some type of closed function there. So if there's tables or anything like that need to be stored or anything like that out of the way, if we needed to transition the room, we could do that.
My only concern with that particular layout would be that if you have citizens coming in from the backside, that could seem very disruptive.
So right here, there's a wall from here to there.
Yeah.
So there's a wall from there to there.
Could we possibly put a small wall down the side? I see what you're saying. So instead of folks walking in behind us, they could walk down that wall and then just come out to the seating area.
Or you could reverse the order. You could have the seats on the other side. Depending on the size of the meeting, you could have a lot of people congregating back there. I mean, it's just one of those weird things.
Right? Just the one.
And what about the police officers when you go in that sitting outside the courtroom? Where will they be to monitor the people coming into the board meeting? Are they in the vestibule?
So, Mrs. Booker, right now the only reason that the police officers are there is because we're in the courthouse. For a standard meeting, and I don't know if, I think I saw Sheriff Hess on here, I don't necessarily know. I mean, if you think about any meeting that we have in the Morris room for a work session, we generally don't have police officers in there unless Sheriff Hess or one of his captains may be in there. So no, for a standard meeting in this space, there would not be a deputy in there unless there was a need for one.
I've got a question. Where was
Barbarian? Go ahead.
Here.
I'm finished. Go ahead, Ms. Akers.
Where's the screen where we put up the displays of what we're talking about? Right there?
Yeah, so here's the room. So the board would sit up front.
Oh, I see it. They're up.
So you'd have two monitors on each side, and then for the people that are behind the section, the issue is with this big old firehouse, there are two giant columns down there that you really can't get rid of. So you'd have monitors up front where the board is, you'd have monitors right here for those that are behind this section that could see it. In addition, there's monitors on the flip side, so the board sitting there could see the monitors on both sides as well.
I only have one
okay.
thing.
You want a bigger monitor?
I was gonna say, Josh, you got a lot of faith in my eyesight, because the monitor for the ground is a lot bigger than the monitor I got to look at.
Please keep in mind this is a schematic rendering. we'll work on the size of the monitors. Thank you.
All right, is that it?
Well, yeah, then
there's a couple of options for the outside.
So here's, there's two options for the exterior. So here's one rendering. Again, here's the entrance. There's like the conference room area. And then this kind of puts a cover over the entrance only. So that's option one. And again, you have the stairs coming down, going to a sidewalk and kind of have a grassy area and you know, kind of a barrier up front. Or option two is more of a covered area over the whole section, over the whole front section. And I can say from staff standpoint, from the staff that I spoke with, like this option better, just because it kind of mirrored the aesthetics and the roof line of the existing building there. But it's entirely up to the board. And if there's some things the board does not like with this, or you think there's something that we're missing or we haven't included, we can certainly look at it. Like I said, we've had a you know, a good amount of staff looking at trying to, when you go back to this, trying to look at the different layouts, how we could do it. You know, we even had at one point of having the board up here and then, you know, having seating going back this way. And you know, a lot of it you run into also, even if it's here, you know, you got the doorway coming down here, so you would either have to close this off completely, which you could, and then they would come out maybe this area right here. That could possibly be another option. It eliminates a little bit of seating, and this space kind of goes away a little bit for being able to see the board if they're sitting, you know, if they're their desk and tables are sitting right there looking that way.
And one thing we could say is if we've already started the meeting, you got to walk around the building to come in the vestibule.
Josh, what are your thoughts about it? Do you have anything else you think we could do so they're not coming from behind?
Great question. So one of the things that we can do, we cannot stop the egress. We need two means of egress because of the amount of occupants leaving the meeting room. So going from the purple area, one option is A, going up the stair, which is behind the supervisors is option A. Really, we want public going down to the vestibule and exiting out of that door. But it's by code required to have two. What you're not required is multiple entrances in. So while the elevator would have to remain an entrance coming in for accessibility, what we could do is basically prevent the stair from being opened on the upper levels or even here, so that way persons can't, you know, wouldn't be able to come into the space from behind. We could do a signage, we can also put a lock set on there so that way the doors couldn't be opened so that public couldn't come in from that direction. But from a code standpoint, we wouldn't be required to allow people to come in that from the upper level down that way. Does that make sense?
Well, it does. Anyone who's in a wheelchair couldn't come in. Anybody who's handicapped, a walker, wouldn't they come in to close that off?
Well, no,
we're talking about the stairs.
Down the steps.
Well, yeah, they would still be able to come down the elevator. The stairwell coming down behind here would be would be closed, but I still see your concern, because if you have someone that's handicapped coming down here, they would still kind of come in around the side.
Why not rotate the whole room 90 degrees counterclockwise, so that, you know, and then open up, you know, one of the doors where the elevator mechanical is, so that people come down the stairs and they can come out, and they can walk down along the side and sit, and they're not interrupting the flow of the meeting, right? I mean, there's only seven of us at maximum. Right.
Yeah.
Five of us. And
so are you saying having the tables more this way?
Well, to take the whole view and rotate it counterclockwise.
He's saying
do it like we did the original.
Yeah.
Okay. Right there, have tables there.
Right. Have the tables there, and then instead of having the opening on the far left, so that people are coming out there, have the opening near the mechanical room.
Right.
So they come out in the middle of the room.
Well, and so we can do a lot of things with this, because, again, if you look at this, you could have this vestibule coming here, and people could enter here, and you could have a wall up right there, and people could come down the stairs and then come out like right here. So you could be more closed off. I'm just not sure what that does.
I mean, I said counterclockwise because look at the elevator mechanical room. I see the vestibule there.
And they're not
doing clockwise as well, too, right?
Yeah.
Because then the elevator's right there.
Can't do that.
But there's a lot less people that are going to take an elevator than would probably take the stairs.
Well, and look at the other thing. If somebody gets up to go to the bathroom, we don't want to be on the right, because then they're going to walk right by us.
All right.
Yeah, because you have the restrooms right here, and those are, there's some existing mechanical plumbing in there, but it would need to be redone. But that those are currently some existing restroom facilities. So, like I said, we originally had it like this, but just looking at some of the different functions, we could twist it. Josh, do you have any other thoughts on how we could?
So we ran with probably five or six different layouts. The challenge, and right, if you recall at the last meeting, when we were presented the two options, we actually had the entire room rotated clockwise 90 degrees. It does, probably the biggest challenge is because of where the columns are located at, is that it does create a sightline issue with where those columns are. So really it forces us in between the two sets of columns on the plan north by the yellow machine room, and those columns that everything needs to be kind of shrunk into those spaces, and reduces our seating capacity by 20 to 30 occupants just because of sight lines. This was the most efficient, and we totally hear you, we'll work on ways to try to reduce the impact on vision, but this is from a standpoint of getting the most amount of occupants and the most efficient, and where the majority of your viewers are going to be coming in is going to be coming in from the sidewalk. One thing that we definitely could look at would be to create walls that run basically parallel on both sides. So what that would do is basically kind of cradle, if you can cradle the tables in the front, and really the people coming out of the stove, the elevator, the first time that they would see that would be as they get to the seats themselves in that front row. So it would definitely be less distractive, and we'll look at that option also. But what's important about this room is that we're gonna do our best to design this to make it the most flexible as possible. So if you want to do different layouts depending on the different functions, then if you want to rotate at 90 degrees one way or the other, that you would have that ability. So we'll continue to work on different layouts over the next week and a half. Before ready, if the board was just to move forward with this.
I think we need to also keep in mind that this has to be finished by December 30th. So we can't spend so much time on the design. We need to get going on the building.
If we make it like Josh was talking about, where they have to come in, unless they're handicapped, this booker, if anybody's handicapped, they've got to, of course, use the elevator. But anybody that can walk goes around to the vestibule and comes in. We just close off that door right there.
Well, yeah, as you said, we can either close this door off upstairs so people can't come down here, or as you said, you can create like a little wall coming out here on each side, which kind of cradles you in. So you know, people would come down here, and until they got about right here, if there was a wall coming right there, then they wouldn't see the board until they got to that point.
To me, instead of Craigland, I just, if you wanted to put a wall, come down the wall on the right, because that's where they got, we have to keep the elevator open.
Yep.
Okay? That one, we just close off, and that way it leaves it there in case we need to store stuff or anything else.
Yeah, well, that's after the meeting starts, but before the meeting starts, you've got a lot of people coming that way. Unless you're just forcing people to go that way.
No, just tell people they're coming into vestibule.
Well, like I said, the only other thing we could do is we would have to look at some type of ADA functionality to come down this way. What's that?
Because you need two exits.
Well, no, just ADA.
You just need ADA. You need one ADA accessible way to get in. So if you had ADA accessible here, you'd have to do some type of what I almost think of as like switchbacks coming down.
Well, that's what he was talking about. Cost
right. That would add a big cost to this, and maybe it's worthwhile, maybe it's not.
The elevator is not ADA.
What's that?
It does
add time, and you know, like I said, it's going to add time. And Josh, you have any thoughts on the time factor?
For creating the ramp?
Yes.
I don't. It's in order to construct that, it would probably be a 2 to 3 month construct because it's about 160 foot with switchbacks. And so we're estimating somewhere around $175,000 to create it. The other option, which we talked about, if you go back to the site plan, you know, if this is, would be to create a couple of handicap spots facing off the turn, which was, we're trying to prevent people from pulling into the existing parking area. But that would be one other option, would be to create a couple of accessible spaces at that lower level to avoid doing the ramp. That would definitely be more cost-effective approach to it.
And Mr. Sheridan raised a good point. You could, with having AV equipment in the Morris room, still make that an accessible room for people that are handicapped.
You could.
As an overflow.
As an overflow.
You could.
Or as access for handicapped people that want to participate. That would be pretty easy to do.
Are you saying not allow them to come down by the elevator, or?
No, I mean, you could, but I'm just saying if you're concerned about handicap accessibility and so on, you can still make the meeting very public by allowing them to participate from the Morris room. That still gives a sense of being here.
And what I was discussing is, if you put that ramp down there, Josh already talked about it, you got to put in extra parking spaces. There, right now, we would have, if someone is handicapped,
yep,
park across from the courthouse.
Because
they got to come into the Morris room level. Right. If they want to go down the elevator. If they want to sit there and watch a meeting in the Morris room, they can watch it there.
What's the current seating capacity of the courtroom?
This would be just big, almost.
Josh, you know the current seating capacity of the courtroom?
I apologize, not off the top of my head, I don't.
Let's think here.
We're probably within 100, within 50. I can't imagine it's over 100.
The sheriff is on, would he know?
Yeah, well, let's ask.
Sheriff Hess, do you have an idea of how many can sit in the courthouse?
He's still muted.
He's muted.
I asked.
I mean, it's bench sheets, what is it, maybe 12, three rows. You need six people for each row.
No, on the outside.
Hello?
Yeah, hey, Sheriff.
Yes, what was the question again, please?
Capacity of seating in the courtroom.
Right, I think, I'm thinking off the cuff, but I'm thinking right at 75.
So it's similar, with the only exception is this has the overflow to it.
Right.
Outside, you're only going to get three, maybe four people. In the middle, you might get six. You're going to squeeze them in and get six in there.
Yeah, on the outside rows, four people is snug.
That's the most you're going to get on there.
Yes, four people is snug.
This is where the general business comes in to play.
Yeah.
If I could say one thing.
Yes, sir.
Earlier when Ms. Booker asked about having a deputy there, I would strongly encourage that for the safety of the board members as well as the public, when you have meetings like times, and just have it as a not an occasional event where someone is there, but I think it's better to be there every time.
Because you have been there. Every meeting I've been to, you have deputies have been out there, and it wasn't a court case. When we've met, deputies were there. So I don't think we need to overlook that.
Well, yes, ma'am. I see we're in the jurisdictions when the board meets, the boards meet, that they have a law enforcement officer there.
Not so much a checkpoint, but just to have law enforcement officer
present. Correct. Just the mere appearance of someone there to, if there is an issue like we've talked in the past, that someone is there, not that you have to wait on someone.
Yeah, and like I said, that's certainly not an issue. We could certainly work that out with the sheriff, and I'm sure.
Absolutely.
I guess the only other question I would have is, do we need that much conference space?
Like down here? Mr. O'Brien asked, do we need that much conference room space? So I can tell you in the admin building right now, the only space we have that has anything where, besides if you talk about this, near the room is the Morris room.
And then you have the little room now where Parks and Rec meets.
Well, you have a small planning conference room, and it's small and snug and odd-shaped, and it's...
So will we convert that to office space?
You could. I mean, probably at some point, until we build a new admin building. Like I said, I'm not expecting this necessarily to be the long-term solution, but this room is certainly a solution for whatever we do with this building going forward, because... it's going to provide meeting space. It's going to provide room to have meetings down there, or just provide any type of flex space.
Down the road, we've talked about this possibly becoming something with the court system.
Sure.
And then you've got places where you can keep privacy and go play
with it. And the Morris room could be converted to an office.
The Morris room could be converted to an office. The planning conference room, it was an office. Actually, my office was in there one time when the finance department was down there. So I mean, it's for a meeting space. If you've got like maybe four people at most, it's fine. But we are fighting for space anytime we have anything more than four people, because we really only have one room. So again, we could either keep it like this and flank it, or we can switch it.
I think as long as you have a deputy there, I mean, I think, you know, certainly safety is always a concern.
Yep.
You can't see, not just for the board supervisor, but for the public, to have this big wall behind you is disconcerting, you know, from a safety standpoint. But, you know, as long as there's a deputy that's present at the meeting, I don't think that's a real concern.
So I guess one thing we could do, we can maybe come back. I mean, we'll probably have to move forward as if the board wants to move forward with this. We might be able to show one other option of twisting it the other way. And
it's going to be tough.
I think the board agrees. I mean, I think that we all agree that spending $170,000 to do switchbacks, given the timeline, doesn't make sense. So to whatever degree this gets tweaked.
And we can tweak it after we agree on it.
Yeah. We just need to get started on the actual layout. We can adjust.
Are there any questions, ladies?
And then they like you've answered them. Now.
Okay. Mr.
And then just one thing, looking at the two kind of outside renderings, does the board have a preference over this one or this one?
I love that one.
Well,
I like that one best.
I like that one. I'd like to ask our building guy. But I know Mr. Hickman's done a lot of construction. Mr. Hickman, with these two, would there be any issues, or are they equally okay as far as, you know, possible difficulties down the road? That would be my question. That's all we'll ask. I like the one that matches.
Yeah, this one, and then it just provides a little extra cover, provides a little extra shade over the windows.
Gives you a chance to put your umbrella up.
It does. So.
All right.
I like that one.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Ms. Booker, would you like to make this first motion?
All right. I move that the Board of Supervisors approve a budget transfer of $68,210 from the Fiscal Year 21 CARES Act contingency line to the Fiscal Year 21 CARES Act professional services line.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay.
Second.
Got a motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mrs. Eager. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0 with Mr. Weaver absent. Do we have a second motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve.
Aye.
Go ahead, Ms. Booker. It's fine.
Go ahead.
I move the Board of Supervisors to approve project agreement number 3 between Kanata County and Crabtree Rohbar and Associates, Inc. to complete the project, renovate the administration building basement into a multi-purpose room totaling $68,210 for the purpose of providing adequate meeting space and social distancing for all public meetings, and further authorize the county administrator to execute agreement subject to approval as to form by the county attorney.
Do I have a second?
Aye.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Eager. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0.
And Mr. Chair, just one thing, you know, and then Josh, are you still there?
No, hang on.
No.
There you go. Yes.
Josh, you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Yeah, and just, you know, this is going to be, as we said, I know I've talked to a couple board members. You know, there's a concern. Can we get this done in time? Because it's an aggressive timeline. But we certainly can get it done. And you know, we'll have to discuss if there's ways to incentivize maybe contractors. Either we say it's got to be done by a period, you know, at least 2 weeks prior to December 30th, or if there's some type of incentive for finishing the project early or something like that. Those are things that we can look at with the county attorney and the contractors and the bid documents to make sure that it's done by December 30th.
Well, make sure that it says uncompleted no matter how much we spend by December 30th.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Bauer.
All right, thank you all. Appreciate your time.
Oh,
yeah, that's good. That's gonna be a good one. So again, I mean, not much to. So again, we're here to talk about the Fort Union broadband expansion. As we talked about before, distance learning, teleworking, and healthcare for telehealth. There's a need for expanded broadband in the southern part of the county, which is unserved and underserved. And really the area that we're talking about is considered the Dominion Energy Electric Service District in the southern part of the county. We can use CARES fund for expanding coverage to address the distance learning, teleworking, and telehealth. We had conversations and meetings with CVEC to try and get a partial project expanding broadband into an area that is not their typical service territory. Again, just like the previous item, anything that we move forward with would have to be built out and operational by December 30th. County buildings, community ball fields, and residents along the line could be operational sooner. They would be starting at, as I said before, Carysbrook Road, coming out to 15 by Social Services, going south on 15. So as they're building out that fiber line, they could be hooking up businesses and residents along the way as they go, and setting up free Wi-Fi hotspots at DSS and the community ball fields there as they start going south. you know, COVID-19 has certainly changed the way that we function. You know, employees are continuing to telework, and with the current pandemic, COVID pandemic, we're not sure how that's going to change or when that's going to change. And being a rural community, having reliable high-speed internet is important too, from just a healthcare standpoint, from a telehealth standpoint. And then certainly with Winona County Public Schools starting their school year 100% virtual, and not knowing when that's going to change, you know, there still may be some component of virtual school as time goes on. So it's something that we need to look at. When we spoke last week, the board wanted to look at option two, which was, and I'll show you the next one, which was option one, but it also extended from Dixie going east towards Columbia. And so option one was a total of 7.4 miles of fiber at a cost of $520,000. Again, option two is this. Here's Carysbrook Road, here's roughly where Carysbrook Elementary is in DSS, south on 15 down to Dixie, from Dixie, just past the, just up until Fork Union, up until the sidewalks, and then from Dixie, going back this way, going down Gravel Hill Road and Holmhead, I think Holmhead Road's that way. So that's the route that we were talking about. You know, we talked about that Firefly will provide free Wi-Fi hotspots, make available without a cost at community ball fields, and they would pay to hook it back into their system. So myself, Mr. Notman, Mr. O'Brien, had a Zoom meeting with CVEC regarding this project. And Mr. O'Brien, since you were on, you want to discuss some of that?
Yeah, I mean, I start off with, again, I think CVEC's a great partner to the county. You know, to be clear, going to serve about, I think you said 150 people initially. And so my concerns were, how do we make sure that we leverage this opportunity to serve as many people as possible, as quickly as possible, and expand the capabilities from that standpoint? So we had some good conversations around that, and you know, CVEC has said that would probably, beyond this initial expansion, it wouldn't be until about 2021 that they would look to get additional grant monies to be able to expand further into Dominion territory. Now, running down along, you know, 15 and down into 6, especially in option one, there's, I would say, the bulk of the homes are being serviced from that standpoint. Option two, when you look at the mapping from there, there's a lot less that's being serviced. So you've got that one development over there. There's not as many businesses down that side of it, in my opinion. So, you know, I'm looking at what could they do to make sure the county's connected? And so we talked about that on the overslash components, which would be part of this, I assume, in terms of we would have our own fiber strands that then connect us back to our existing fiber link. Is that what you mean by that particular component?
Correct, yes.
I think that to the degree that we can then take those county buildings and maybe another project, connect some fiber to some towers so that we can get into coverage to serve other areas from a WIS standpoint and get into the Dominion territory quicker, that would be a good thing. But beyond that, I mean, personally, I mean, I think option one's great. Option two, I'm a little bit less excited about, just because I think there's a little, you know, the bang for the buck there's a little bit less. That's just my personal opinion on that. But county, you know, the county administration may have a different feeling about that.
Well, I mean, though, like I said, you certainly, I mean, when you go back, let me go back here. So with option one, it was 96 homes and businesses, and it was a 5-mile build. Going option two, you get 100, so you get about another 50 homes.
56.
Yeah, 50,
54.
54 yeah. Homes hitting option two.
And that only adds, well, that's 2 miles.
Yeah.
I didn't even think it was gonna be that far, because yeah. It's not not very far to get to Brown Hill.
No, and it's kind of going off a couple different roads. It's not maybe not necessarily just staying right there, but yeah, I mean, it's...
And it's, what is it, you know, when I looked at kind of like what are the county's assets along that part of it, there just didn't seem to be very many assets there. It seemed like we were running fiber primarily to get to that one cluster subdivision there, which I think you could have reached through, you know, wireless as well, too. So I'm not sure that that's, you know, the best choice in terms of spending that extra $200,000 personally.
Sure.
That's my thought on that.
Just to be clear,
CVEC is, or Firefly, I should say, is looking at least 2021 and the original boundaries before they expand in that area. So that the public has an expectation that even though Firefly is coming into that territory, it's a limited expansion right now.
Yeah, there are some grants out there that CVEC could go for, and like I said, they are trying to. They've got the ability to do this small project to get it into this, you know, to start getting it into the southern part of the county in a territory that is currently not theirs. They're certainly focused on making sure that they build out their current network first. And maybe there's more opportunities for the county and if it's a CVEC that wants to do a grant, a VADI grant or something like that. I know the governor in some of his budget talks is proposing another $85 million for broadband expansion through the VADI grants. So from my standpoint, the further we get it south, because once you get down to that way, then you kind of get down to the Bremo Road area. And, you know, once you can kind of get down to Bremo Road, then, you know, you're not far from the Cloverdale area and then start pushing out. I mean, you're still a good distance, but you're getting closer. But I certainly understand your thought of getting more wireless through towers and you know, and maybe with this, maybe that'll do that. Maybe it will not. You know, we do have some towers that we can utilize, and like I know this is more of this falls more into your wheelhouse, through your professional side.
And I mean, we're, you know, when I say we, you know, in looking at this, the county has invested, you know, a fair amount of money on these towers already. I forget the exact number, but it seems to be
about a million,
$2 million, maybe a million.
I think about a million, yeah. Like that.
And right now, we're only leveraging them for the 911 purposes. It's a little, you know, premature. It's premature right now, but you know, the county could certainly take the option of establishing a broadband authority if it wanted to do that, similar to what Roanoke's done. To bring additional broadband further into the county. And I think as we look as to how we do that and the demands that are there, that's a good thing for the county. I mean, we're looking at spending for the schools $4,000 a month just to provide hotspots, just as an example. So to the degree that we can mitigate those costs, that's a good thing, because I don't think that we'll, you know, probably be seeing a return to school at the full levels for some time to be. And this allows us to get there quicker. You know, what the only question I would have is, were we to expand down Route 6 into those areas, and again, if you want to pull up the GIS map, I really didn't see a whole lot there, but I might have missed something coming down Route 6 on the right-hand side there, other than that one cluster neighborhood, that would be of an immediate benefit to the county beyond serving those additional 50 homes there. And I don't even know how many school children.
Well, no, because once you get behind that point, I mean, you're getting down to Bryan's Ford Road, and you know, you got a subdivision back there. Then once you kind of start going down, once you get to Bremo, I mean, down Bremo Road, it's pretty sparse until maybe you kind of go up and you start getting into the Cloverdale area. You've got more concentrations of homes there. And then if you continue going down Bremo, once you get to West Bottom and stuff like that, then you've got another concentration of homes in that area.
Now, my question would be this. When you're talking about, I'm sorry, I wasn't talking loud. Let me talk loud. When you're talking about utilizing towers, are you talking about utilizing just the ones that we built, or the ones that we built and VEPCO?
Well, you have a lot of options there. You can use water towers, you can use the towers, you can use county building, school towers that are available. Any of those are options.
All right. Now, the one thing I will say about the little branch off right there, mm-hmm. that's as far as you can get away from all of those.
I understand, but you've got, I don't have a tower map overlay here. You probably have a tower just to the right of that.
Well, there's a tower over there. The Morris Tower is over off of Remo Road. Mm-hmm. Now, if we're talking about putting stuff on every tower in the county, then that's absolutely possible.
But
if we're talking about just using ours, you got the one in the Columbia District, and then the Vepco Tower, and then the one at the dump. And they're all pretty far away from that. That's probably very centrally located away from all three of those. Now,
if I recollect, you have to pull up the map.
That's the Morris Tower.
Okay.
It's built on Perry Morris's land. It's right there on 656. It's about a mile away from that.
To the right?
To the east. Yeah. To the east.
So it's like up near where the river is, I think, or something there. Is that right?
It's on 656, about a quarter of a mile south from Route 6. It is very close to that area.
Right.
But that is not our tower. That is one we'd have to invest with another company. I don't know what company that is.
Yeah, I mean, really the closest towers that we own from this build right here, and like I said, and I'm just using from here, you know, if you go up this way, there is a tower right up there at the school at Carysbrook Elementary. It's probably about 110, 140 feet.
That's a
school-owned tower. There's a tower up at Fluvanna Middle School, again.
Columbia District's probably next closest one if you go as a crow flies.
Well, yeah, the Columbia District, there's actually two towers there. There's an old short tower, school tower, and then we've got one of our new built towers there that's 250, 300 feet right there. Once you start getting into the Fork Union area, the next closest one would be the two water tanks that we have for FUSD. One there off of 6. In addition, once you start going down 6, closer to where Mrs. Booker is, we also have a tower out at the convenience center. But you know, now you're kind of getting into an area that, and which this may or may not have any bearing. You're getting into an area that CVEC is going to have built out with their own stuff at some point, but it doesn't mean that we couldn't put some WISP on, you know, something on our tower there.
You are correct. Just a mile east of that, there is a tower. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't own that tower. Mm-hmm. It's the Morris Tower.
But yeah, so south of here, we don't own a lot of towers. There are some.
Vepco's the next one.
Vepco down, yep. Vepco is the next tower, and they've got about, I think it's close to a 350, 400 foot tower, but they're down, like I said, I sent you all the coordinates.
We're trying to get that all mapped out to say what would that impact be in terms of how many people could potentially be served.
Sure. And maybe there's an opportunity to use the Vepco tower.
There may be. I mean, that's, you know, it's, I think what's, you know, normally I would say, if we weren't hurrying for time to serve kids, then fiber is great. But because we are hurrying for time and we have limited funds, how do we make the best use of those funds? And my concern is that, you know, 50 homes, $200,000, that's a pretty significant investment into that limited area.
Tony, they meant I'll look up. A lot of people who don't have children or are older, they didn't hook up. Some of my neighbors have not, and they had the opportunity to.
I know I've spoke to one family that live in that neighborhood there that we're talking about, and the what they have available to them right now is not fantastic.
Oh,
and
no.
And
I know I drive the school bus over there. There's a bunch of kids in there.
Yep.
But you got one as soon as you turn left. Oh shit!
You got Gravel Hill. You got Holmhead. You have Gale Hill.
Gale Hill, but there's one right there to the left.
There's
about 10,
Red Bank.
15, no, it's even before Red Bank.
Okay.
Rectory.
Okay.
Rectory Lane. That's got about 15 houses on it. Red Bank's probably got about 15, but I don't know if it's going down Red Bank. in that gravel hill area, you got at least 20 to 25, I'm guessing.
Right.
And probably somewhere between 10 and 15, well, probably more like 15 of them have children.
Well, and it, you know.
Excuse me. You know, when I saw this, I immediately, because I'm familiar with that area, I immediately wanted to know where the children were. Gravel Hill Road is a circle and it comes back out on 6. There may be some kids there. But I'm wondering why we cannot say how many children are on Rutland Road, how many children are, and 6 is, there's very much down Route 6. Once you go past Dixie, I don't know of any businesses down the Humham down there that come out of that gravel hill. I don't see a lot of, there's not a lot of homes or people down there.
Yeah.
So I've been struggling with where are the children. I see 150 homes and businesses, and I'm saying, where are they? Why can't we identify how many children are down where we're talking about?
Well, we could work closer with the schools, and I'm sure they could give us a list of every child. We work with the schools.
The transportation part department probably.
I've asked for that, and I'm not trying to be, but I'm gonna be honest, I haven't received it. I don't know. I guess I'll just have to drive down the roads.
Right.
Hey, you've heard me ask. You must have a map in this district. That's the only thing I am. We need to make decisions on more facts. If we're gonna put $500,000, now when you're talking about the children who are in Carisbrook School, yes. But I'm trying to think of, when you're talking about Falkirk and stuff, I'm looking at West Bottom, Cloverdale, I'm looking at Shores Road, I'm looking at Mountain Hill Road, parts of Scottsville. That's where the service eventually will go, I hope. But I'm not real sure about Plan 1 or Option 1 or Option 2. I need some more information.
The question I would have...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
This is Brian Rothman, Economic Development. One thing to keep in mind is, you know, obviously this is limited based off of how quickly it can be done by December. But when you get closer down Route 6, that brings you closer to Columbia, which CBEC is servicing east of Columbia. So now this area is more attractive if you have fiber that's going a little bit further down 6 for any provider to go for a grant that will then get us into that Cloverdale and West Bottom area. If you eliminate that leg, this area now doesn't get a vein to go into it. It makes it just more difficult for a future grant. I mean, really, kind of the way I look at this is to say, it gives us an immediate need. It, you know, meets an immediate need for some people, but it'll make a longer lasting impact based off of future grants and future opportunities and our goal to, you know, get 100% of our community with internet.
And I guess one of the things that I would say is about 1 and 2, and I hear what you're saying. What if we try for 2 and we don't get both? I would say try to get 1 done. And if we get 1 done, see if we can't get 2 done.
Well, I think
as much as possible.
Well, I think the question I would ask, not to necessarily put it that way, is to say, you know, the board, I think, would say option 1 is fine right now, let's do it. The question is, if we don't say yes to option 2 right now for the next week, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever, does that make option 2 a foregone conclusion?
If
the answer to that is no, they can still squeeze it in, then, you know, I would say we do option 1 with the idea of we're still reviewing option 2. And it sounds based on the schedule and how quickly they're doing fiber and so on, that's still a possibility. I don't know if CVAC's on the line to answer that question.
No, and
I gather that they kind of felt like, yeah, they've already started getting the ball moving. They're probably there. You know, they're looking. I mean, they are very much looking at how they're going to bring broadband across, just not Flumana County, but many, many other counties, mm-hmm. and they're looking ahead into future grants where they're not covering. So, you know, kudos to them.
Well,
we're just looking at what money do we have to spend today and how quickly can we serve people.
And you know, they said that they really kind of need some decisions by the end of August to really, because they've got to work through, you know, VDOT right-of-ways, they got to get the engineering done. So I don't necessarily think that we could get done with option one and say, okay, well, now we want to look at option two. And like I said, maybe 2 weeks we can. My standpoint is we've got funding to try and spread it to the biggest array of homes and families that we can. And the further that we can spread that into a territory that is not adequately covered right now, and no one's stepped up to the plate to cover it at this point.
Well, that's the question. That's what I'm trying to balance it against. Can we get somebody to step up to the plate there to see what we have? We just don't have that information available.
Yeah.
We just got the GIS coordinates, 2 days ago. So,
well, and it doesn't mean that there's not another option if we do this to then enhance what we're doing. That may be the case, but. Yeah.
I guess after spending $500,000 here, I mean, Mr. Sheridan pointed out last time that, you know, in the course of that meeting between additional money that was given to the schools and so on, they were spending close to $1.5 million. I know part of that was part of CARES Part 1, but after spending this and what we're doing, what's left with CARES Part 2? Were we to look at it? I don't know off the top of my head what the difference between saving $200,000 which $170,000 would change.
It's about $170,000, I'm guessing, per 50.
We have the total for the generators.
Per 50.
Hey, everybody.
And that's, that's assuming everybody signs up.
Yes, ma'am?
I said, we have to remember that we only have 4 months.
No, I absolutely understand.
This has to be done.
Yeah, I absolutely understand.
If they need guidance, if we go with option two, and going back to what Mr. Rothwell said, this is a guess, I'm just off the top of my head, that puts the CBAC line, it comes down just west, and it's just west of Columbia, that it comes down right down Stage Junction Road. And between Stage Junction Road and that line right there is probably only 3.5 miles. So that closes it quite a bit.
So prior to tonight, from CARES funding, we had basically $3.3 million that has not been allocated at this point. So, you know, if we're talking $500,000 for the admin building, we're talking, say we decide to go with a $500,000 option here, that brings us down to $2.3 million left. And plus you approve some.
So that's just, I mean, that in the scheme of things, $170,000 isn't a huge amount from that standpoint. I'm just highlighting, the realities of, let's face it, at the end of the day, this is great, but if you're not overlaying how does the county itself benefit, then other than serving 200 people,
sure.
Is that the maximum buck? Or is the county being wise in how they're spending their money?
Well,
that would be the only question. And going down Route 15, there's no question there's lots of other benefits.
Yep.
Because we have county buildings and county assets involved there. So,
But the problem is, this can't be about county assets and economic development. The only way CARES will pay for this is if it's about virtual learning and teleworking.
Yeah.
This cannot be driven by economic development or they won't pay a dime.
Well, that's a fair point. And and the ability to put in
that's right.
In the county assets, the ability to put in the hotspots was a
big
And we can do that with option two. We can still do that. It's just option two, we have funding to be able to, we have funding to utilize that we could affect more families, positively affect more families, and get closer to expanding into that area that desperately needs it.
That's understood.
So $2 million plus, you know, that's plenty of Google money.
All right.
So really, all I'm asking the board to do tonight, you know, we not only said, what do you want to do last week? This is really to allocate the money to the EDA. Now, I've been working with Christina at Fred's office. We've been back and forth with CVAC and CVAC's attorney. There's still some work to do to get a formal agreement moving forward. You know, this is, because this is so new and it's happening quickly, you know, so CVAC's attorney, not only are they CVAC's attorney, but they're also the Nelson County attorney as well. So Nelson County is looking to do some stuff like this as well as Amherst. So we're still trying to work out some of the particulars of it, but this is really, I think, by the board saying, yes, we want to appropriate this money to the EDA. This is kind of, a motion that look, Fluvanna County is committed to moving forward.
There's no final agreement with CVAC at this point in time. It's just a commitment to move forward. And we can iron out some of the details.
Yeah, so some of the details of, you know, do we want to, you know, is it, are they putting in 48 strands? And we say, well, let's put in 96 strands.
Or the fiber going to the particular buildings themselves.
Correct.
That would be, you know, pretty important, so.
Yeah.
And I think your idea of that pole, we can do DUCCO to allow us to put something down there. Then Ms. Booker, if we can put something on the pole at DEVCO, that would serve a whole lot of West Bottom and Cloverdale, ma'am.
Well, if we can get on the pole at DEVCO, and even the water tanks.
Even if DEVCO doesn't own it, as long as you're on towers, or even if you put in a monopole that's high enough to see the other towers, that then it serves into that neighborhood, you can get a lot of coverage out of that. Those monopoles don't have to be super expensive, so there's a lot of things that you can do.
Andy, do you have anything,
Well, the only thing that you also forget is that along this route, anywhere we want, CVAC will put in public hotspots to provide internet for free, and they'll pay for the bandwidth and everything. They'll pay for the installation, pay for the bandwidth.
You talk about public raw fields, will that include the Little League field down in the bottom? Would be a good place if we have to talk.
Well, no, not for this, because we don't have the broad. Are you talking about?
The free hotspot is the ball field.
They should cover. They said that they would cover all the athletic fields that are along this route.
Are you talking about?
That was not owned by the county.
You talking about the Lions Club field? Or?
No, the Lions Club.
The Lions Club one. It's one down the road from Carysbrook. But wherever we say this is where we want a hotspot, so it might not get every family in that area, but it'll make it a lot shorter for them to get free broadband.
And that, the only thing I didn't see, I mean, I could be wrong, I just didn't see real catalog assets going down that.
Community center?
Option two.
No, going down towards Holman.
That way, no.
We don't, but it's
if there's a church in there, and if they're amenable to having a hotspot in their parking lot,
They're not
one in this. Yeah. And it
doesn't. That's the only.
That was the thing, when I looked at the GIS map and I went down on it, it was like, there's just a lot of trees.
I don't even know what businesses you're talking about. There's 50 some homes. How many children are in the. I just don't see. This is because of the COVID-19.
All right.
Then we need to know that it's helping those children. And if it's any business down there, please tell me where they are.
Well, I think it's more than just children. We're helping children. We're helping families that are teleworking.
Possible seniors.
We're helping families that have, you know, if they've got the ability to do telehealth, there's a benefit from doing that. You know, when you're in a rural community, there's a benefit to, you know, being able to, you know.
And I know that, Eric, I know that. And I know probably the majority of those families down there, they're all retired. I mean, I don't know whether we're calling the right people. I mean, I'm not sure. We need, if we can do that and help with this in the future, fine. But I don't, I just don't see the businesses, the families, I don't see it.
Well, the businesses we really aren't supposed to be talking about.
Well, the businesses are not the focus. The focus is the families that have kids, and the families that are going to need better connectivity.
But it's, it seems if we say we authorize
100, we are pass, this bill will pass 150 homes and businesses.
Yes, ma'am.
That's what option two.
Yes, ma'am. And I think we're kind of nodding our heads that we want to go with option two.
Well, what I was going to suggest is that we allocate up to $520,000 to the EDA with details to be determined as to whether or not we allocate that as option one or option two. That way, you know, the ball is rolling. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, and between now and then, and you know, the county can make assessments as to whether proceeding with option two makes sense or not.
I think we have to talk to CBAC to see if they can do this for us, because it sounds like they're also working for many other communities.
No, and we did, Ms. Eager, we did have that conversation, and they were very confident that they could accomplish this. They were confident that they could accomplish it. I think you said they were laying, was it close to 24
underground crews they're getting rid of.
They're laying down a lot of fiber. And they actually had, I think they mentioned they had a couple of crews that were, you know, kind of in wait right now. So
yeah.
They were confident that they could accomplish this.
Because if you remember, CBEC, a majority of the work that they do, they're putting the fiber on their poles up in the air. Now, every now and then, they will do some underground work. Well, they've got crews that are getting ready to come off some underground jobs. And what we're talking about, since this is not in their in their service district, this is in the Dominion area, it would be going underground. So they've got crews that are ready to hit the ground running. Yes.
Okay, I think, Tony, you've got a good idea. I liked your motion.
All you would really have to say, I move the board of supervisors approve up to $520,000. Let me see here, because this is, I mean, because really this is just approving the money to the EDA. There's a lot of things in here, I would say, that leaves a lot of wiggle room for agreements to still be hashed out. And it doesn't mean that, because remember, there's going to be an agreement with the EDA and CVEC, and the details of that will, I think, kind of probably address more of your concerns. Mr. Payne, do you have anything?
I think this motion was written very carefully, because we're really trading on new ground. When Christina wrote this motion, she had in mind to make sure we had the purposes of being consistent with the CARES Act, and I think it is. I think really the only thing that needs to be done, if you want to change this at all to accommodate Mr. O'Brien's comment, would be that the board approve up to $520,000.
Would you change a broker agreement related to Firefly broadband services and or other providers?
No, I believe the way it is.
Yeah, because I think a lot of the language in there already kind of addresses some of that, that there's further agreements that still need to be.
That's what I was getting
at. Okay. All right, and that's fine. All right, I'll make the motion. Unless, are there any other questions from other board members?
Any questions?
I have lots of questions, but I don't think that I can communicate them So I don't want to hinder any type of progress, but there's so many areas that we could be putting fiber that is not in the Dominion area. If we have the money, why aren't we putting the fiber in those areas with the greatest population? If we're doing this so that for the future, then I can see that too, but I'm not totally feel comfortable with that. So I mean, I'm completely off base, and I was certainly confess to that, and somebody showed me that I am.
The areas that are not
southern part to me is not Road 6 East.
No.
So that's my comment.
Well, and to
y'all can move, maybe we can move forward.
Well, no, I think you have a fair point, Mrs. Booker. It is not going far enough south. It's just not. That's something that we still need to work on. But there are no other connection points at this point, unless, you know, with Mr. O'Brien's thought about getting towers and wireless internet service providers. But for what we can do currently with CVEC, like I said, that's just one component of it. There may be other options that we can still look at to maybe make something happen. And so
yeah, I mean, part of the problem is, Booker, is that everybody's trying to lay fiber everywhere, and so it's what resources do you already have available within the time frame. If we didn't have 4 months to work with, then we might be able to explore a lot of other things. So I understand your frustration. That's part of why I feel like if with the right research, if it lays out that doing a WISP as a rural broadband authority makes sense, that that could be a good solution to service those other areas.
When we had that call with Firefly about this, they said that Dominion originally was not going to do the same kind of a project in their own. The state asked, why can't you do that? They didn't want to do it. They have shareholders. That's why they didn't want to do it. It's not making them money. But they were going to allow other entities get on their infrastructure. But they said in that meeting that that would be a longer process to get the permits to get on Dominion's towers and poles than it would to dig it underground and getting permission from VDOT. That's one of the big holdups. We get this down to Fork Union, they can be working on getting the permission on Dominion, and then they can extend it down the way they know how to do it above ground as far as they can if they come to an agreement with Dominion. That's, you know, one way.
Yeah, we need to talk to Dominion.
Well, we do, but the other thing too is, you know, Starlink is launching next month. Starlink is a Tesla's, you know, satellite program, and they're promising speeds up to a gig is what they're doing, and they're launching next month, and nobody knows what that's going to look like. It could be a flop, it could be a success. They're just testing, and you know, that's designed mostly for outside of the U.S., but if it's as promising as it looks, that could solve a lot of rural broadband problems for a lot of people. We just don't know. That's the challenge. Is we're dealing with kids that can't get the services that they need and the broadband that they need in order to work from home, to study from home.
Mr. Chairman, this is Ryan. Another issue too is I don't think we'd be able to qualify for CARES funding if we were to go into CVEC territory, where yes, that would give us a bigger bang than by Scottsdale, because that's already committed in a budget that occurred before CARES was approved. So this is not obviously, you know, this won't solve all of our problems, but it solves a little part of our problem, and we can get it done by the end of the year. That's why it's kind of only as the scope is as narrow as it is.
Thank you, Mr. Rothmel. I mean, because that's why I know it's frustrating, Ms. Booker. There's nobody more frustrated at the table than me when we talk about getting it put on the poles and everything else, because our area is probably going to be the last one to be done. But we have money sitting there that does not raise our tax rate, and we can put broadband to certain areas, and I don't think we pass that opportunity up.
And for me, I'm like I said, I am highly committed to making sure that we can get, you know, broadband into the other unserved, underserved areas, and this to me is just a stepping stone to kind of get to that area, and to get to the other areas that are not planned out at this point.
This is an area that we have the money to put it there, and we don't have to worry about it anymore. It's there.
Mr. Chair, I move the Board of Supervisors approve up to $520,000 of the $4.758 million Fluvanna County received from the Commonwealth of Virginia as part of the Corona Aid Relief and Economic Security CARES Act to be allocated to the Economic Development Authority of Fluvanna County, the EDA, related to a broadband expansion project in an unserved and underserved territory in the southern portion of the county near Fort Union, as such project has been presented, the broadband project, to assist with social distancing, distance learning, teleworking, telehealth for our residents and businesses, and utilizing the EDA under section 15.2-4900 of the Code of Virginia through the promotion of their safety, health, welfare, convenience, or prosperity in response to the COVID-19 disruption, subject to approval by the county administrator and the county attorney of an appropriate agreement consistent with the resolution between Fluvanna County and the EDA on the broadband project, and further authorize the county administrator to execute such agreement subject to the county attorney's approval as to form, and further subject to approval by the EDA, the county administrator, and the county attorney of an appropriate agreement related to Firefly fiber broadband services and the broadband project consistent with this resolution between the EDA and Central Virginia Services, Inc., a Virginia corporation, DBA Firefly fiber broadband, and a subsidiary of Central Virginia Electric Cooperative, and further authorize the county administrator to approve and, if necessary, execute such an agreement subject to the county attorney's approval as to form. That's the longest one I've ever
read. You got the rest of the $80.
I'll second that.
We have a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Seeger. Ms. Seeger?
Aye.
Ms. Booker? Ms. Booker? O'Brien?
Aye.
She's there.
Ms. Booker! Okay.
I couldn't hear you. There's a lot of static on the line.
Okay, what's your vote, ma'am?
I'm going to vote yes, reluctantly.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0 with Mr. Weaver being absent. Presentations, Parks and Recreation, Fall Youth Day Program Update, Mr. Spitzer.
Good evening. How's everybody doing? You doing clicking for me?
Yeah,
10 minutes, Mr. Spitzer.
The first one would be fairly quick, maybe. So some background on the Parks and Recreation Fall Day Program and Family Support Update. On August 12th, the County School Board voted to keep the school facilities closed to students and implement 100% K-12 virtual instruction through November 2nd of this year.
At least.
Up to now. The decision in this presentation is based on the premise that students congregate at 50% indoors created too much of the health risk for the community. Keeping with the school board's decision, as a lot of programs at Parks and Recreations do, Fluvanna County is unable to run an interactive indoor programming program with groups of students until November the 2nd or later. So Parks and Rec would like to open two of its facilities, and I got confirmation today from another Beaver Dam Baptist that we would be able to use the facilities for Wi-Fi availability for children using Chromebooks to come in and sit at a table for 2 hours at night to be able to do homework. We at the Fluvanna Community Center in Fort Union, we can get 16 tables between two different rooms comfortably and have everybody socially distanced 6 feet apart. The gym, we can get about 20 in the gym. And Beaver Dam Baptist Church, we can get about 20 using two separate rooms. No, you're good. So, Parks and Rec can staff these three locations with CARES funding. We'll have one staff member at each location. Parks and Rec staff will be responsible to sanitize the tables and chairs before leaving the event, before leaving that evening. That way, it takes pressure off of Public Works, whoever comes in the next morning to do cleaning. We would ask Public Works to just do their routine cleaning in our two facilities before 8 a.m., before people come to work. The gym, we don't have as much problem because nobody goes into the gym before 8 a.m. So it would be basically the community center. This program, it should cost no extra money than what's in everybody's budget. And if it's allocated through the CARES Act, it will actually be through that and not through our budgets. So the next slide is some operating guidelines that we would use. When people would come in our facilities, we would definitely do temperature checks before anyone came in the facility, both the child and the adult. Masks would be required at all times while you're in the facility sitting at your table. If you would need a break, you could go outside to get a fresh air and then come back in. We'll require everyone to use hand sanitizer when you come in. We have the handless ones where you throw your hands right under. We allow two siblings and one parent at each table. That way we limit how many people are in an area and we can spread them out. And that way a parent can work with two kids at one time on homework so they don't have to go from one table to another. We would limit, we would probably take out a table in that room because we're letting two kids at one table. We're going to require parents to stay with their children. It's not a daycare. It's not meant for that. It's meant for parents and children to work together to do homework, schoolwork. We're going to ask everybody to pre-register their children for a table at least a day in advance. That'll go through our rec test program, which is all online. And for this reason, we know people do not have internet. That's why we're offering this. So you can call our facilities and we will register for you so you can get a table.
Well, and the one thing too, just to kind of go back to the previous conversation, you know, for all hours, you know, we work with CVEC to get Wi-Fi outside so people can be there and they can have connectivity. But this is really to provide a space for people to go during some evening hours and sit down with their kids that may not have the access.
Well, that way you're not sitting in your car either trying to do homework. You know, how hard is it for a kid to be in the back seat maybe and a parent to be in the front seat or something? You know, it's very difficult.
Especially the training.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to Beaver Dam today. They said we have great Wi-Fi and access outside for people in cars, but we want you to be able to work with your kid in a setting inside.
Sure. Well, because of lighting, I was going to say, because they also have a really nice picnic shelter.
Yes, they do.
How easy is it to relocate? I assume we still have some trailers in schools.
I don't think we do. I think all the trailers are gone.
I have no idea about that.
Yeah.
So we would require all children and parents to bring their own materials. We're not going to give them pencils, paper, nothing. Whatever they bring in, that's what they can use during that time. And we will be very strict. If the child wants to get up, run around, and can't stay at the table, we will ask the family to leave because they are being dangerous to everybody else that is there trying to follow our rules and be safe.
Really, at the end of the day, like I said, we just want to provide a safe place, a socially distanced place where parents and kids can go, have some access to do some schoolwork, and you know, we just want to make sure that rules are being followed, but we give some additional opportunities to the community. And with the CARES funding, like I said, this would certainly, we could certainly meet a need with this. And so we don't have a formal action time, but we want to see what the board's temperature on this item is. And like I said, it's really a couple hours in the evening of some cleaning, and you're talking about a part-time staff person.
I think it's great.
Ms. Booker, I think this might be something that you talked to some of the... I think this might be something where you talk to some of the folks at some of the churches and see if they've got a big hall like Beaver Dam Baptist and might be able to do something like that in the southern areas, and I can take care of the northeastern section.
I've shared with before that every church has an annex. And that you've been to, I think the school system went to West Bottom and expanded their Wi-Fi. My church has a huge annex as well, and we have offered our church to students as well. So there are lots and lots of places, but we need to know if anybody's coming so that we can follow the guidelines that Mr. Spitzer has have put together. And that's the thing, we just can't open a new building and let people come in. We're not doing what we're supposed to do.
Right.
So if we can have copies of guidelines, we've already made the comment that we are available, and we've talked to the schools, but we need the guidelines.
Yeah, and for the Parks and Rec program, what we would be asking them to do is we'd ask them to register at the rec desk, like, you know, 24 hours in advance, just to say, hey, I want to reserve this space for some time, so Parks and Rec staff knows. It's just not kind of like a come one, come all.
That way we're not turning away anybody at the door.
Yep.
I don't, you know, that'd be one thing we don't want to do, is try to turn somebody away at the door.
And like I said, we're not, there's no charge. We're just opening up our facilities in the evening to provide some space. So again, yeah.
So, what I'm asking, I think, is how do I help get this information out to the community, they can come to Falk Union School.
We're going to blast it through our Facebook. Maybe the schools could help us get the information out through when they do their emails to parents and stuff like that. We will figure out a way, the best way we can, to get it to the community.
We could get it, Mrs. Booker, we could get it to the churches, we could get it through numerous
fan
means.
Fan mail, press release.
Press release.
And we may have the same problems with the next presentation, if it goes right.
Yeah. I think this is a really great idea, and I think it will be a great asset to some of the people.
Yep.
It just gives them an opportunity.
Yep.
We just want to make sure that we are trying to help this community if we can to educate their kids.
Yep. All right, man.
All right. Next one.
All right. So my next is it's a youth outdoor gym program proposal. So this is new. This came about because we were not able to do our programming inside for the kids. So we want a program for the kids outside. I would like, before I start, I've been doing this for 2 months, programming for kids outside, and we've had a really good turnout, and we've not, knock on some wood, we've not had any problems up to this date. So my pitch for this is the same thing the county, the school board voted not to go to school, at least until November the 2nd, with 100% virtual, with kids being indoors. So we want to offer a free, all outdoor gym program geared towards first through eighth grade levels. September 8th to October 29th. That is the time frame until the all virtual vote from the school board basically ends right there. Yep. So what we can do, we can handle 100 children from ages first through eighth grade. So 100 first graders, 100 second graders. Each of them are gonna have 2 hour time slots. They're gonna be divided up into 25 children per station. Each will have an 8 foot by 8 foot spot with 6 feet in between each 8 by 8 spot. So we are following CDC guidelines and giving them room to work out while they not getting outside their area. So I have been given permission to use the turf field at the high school track to do this program. I've talked to Mr. Winkler, Mr. Strimler, and AD Mr. Morris, Scott Morris. They did give us permission for the field at a middle school first. I had some concerns about weather for that, so that's why I asked for the turf field, and they're willing to work with us for this program. What we would do for this program, kids would come in, we would stretch everybody for 10 minutes in their own stations. One group would be walking the track, another group will be doing calisthenics. One group may be doing yoga or some other type of tai chi, something like that. And then we want to do mental exercises. So to me, a mental exercise could be two kids 6 feet apart talking to each other that they don't normally get to do all the time. brain games. There's all kinds of things you can do. I mean, I feel this program will help kids more than some other things. Just getting them out of the house, doing stuff. We will work with the PE teachers at the schools for this program, because kids are going to be required to do some type of outdoor activities for the week and record it. So maybe this is a way we can help get some of that accomplished. My plan is every age group will have 2 hours once a week. Like, so first grade will be Mondays at 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. and then fifth grade will be in that afternoon. The reason why I'm doing it is because a lot of times the younger kids get crankier sometimes in the afternoon, so it's better to do them in the mornings, I think, and then do the older kids in the afternoon. Any questions about the times or days? All right, next one. So I will need to hire staff if I'm going to be able to do this program. We'll need about 5 to 6 staff at all times. 1 to 2 of us are going to be composed of our current full-time staff, so there's no need to hire anybody for that. It's the part-time staff that I'll need help with. This program is planned to run 31 days, and that's the time frame from September 8th to October 29th, I think it was. The staff will need to work 2 3-hour shifts, so we'll do 3 hours in the morning, take a lunch, come back and do 3 hours in the afternoon. If somebody can only work mornings, well, maybe we have another staff member can only work afternoons, so we can reach more people for job opportunities if that's the case and stuff like that. So I broke it out, we'll need $12,090 around to run this program for part-time staff. And that's 930 hours. So, we did not run summer camps this summer because we could not travel with kids and have kids together. We have 920 hours available that we did not use this summer for our summer camps. So we could use that money, that part-time money, for this program. No additional funds will be required if we would do that. And then, I've laid out some operating guidelines we would do. We take temperature checks. Masks can be worn at all times, even while in transition out on the field. So if we're moving from one stage to another, we're going to require the kid to put the mask on until they get to the track. If they're walking, they're probably going to wear that mask. But if they're running, we're probably not going to require them to wear that mask.
Kind of similar to the last one. We just have some guidelines.
I mean, it's just guidelines. It's basically the same. You know, there will be only one child in each 8-foot-8 location. Parents will not be able to stay. They're going to drop their kids off at the gate, and then they're going to go. And then we will escort the kids inside. So we're trying to limit who is around who is what we're trying to do. Again, everybody's going to have to sign up on rec desk. We'll ask them to do it by the Thursday before, probably. That way we know what we got going on the next week. Children's going to have to bring their own water bottle or a mat or whatever. And if the child cannot stay in their area, we will have to ask them to leave, because it's going to be very dangerous if we have 100 kids out there and they all cannot stay in their area. So that might be a little battle at the beginning, but we are willing to fight that. I don't need to go through this because I don't have to propose a track to y'all, because I was able to use the turf field, or I was going to propose a track at Pleasant Grove Park. Are there any questions?
I think it's great. My only recommendation would be that, again, we require anybody who's coming up to that's going to participate in the program, parents and/or children, if they have a cell phone, that they install COVID wise on it.
We can put that at the. We can recommend that, I guess, at the front of.
We can recommend it. I'm not sure we can force that.
Did you want to talk about that?
The temperature, you can force them.
They've already got an app on everybody's iPhone now that they've already installed, whether you want it or not.
Schools are.
No. iPhones. I think somebody was talking about that today.
I haven't heard about that.
The website,
but COVID-wise, it's specific to Virginia.
COVID-wise, it's specific to Virginia, but somebody was saying today at our meeting that there's an app, your phone is being monitored for COVID.
That would be great if that is the case. I've heard that.
Somebody might have been wrong. I might have misheard.
I haven't heard that one.
For code-wise to be effective in the state of Virginia, we need like 59% participation. So anything that we do to promote that, we can the benefit of all of our residents.
Yeah, I mean, I think with everything we do, we can certainly market it more and advertise it more. Now whether, I'm not sure if we can, when they come up and, you know, we can certainly recommend it and we can hand out something when the kids go home, or maybe we don't want to hand stuff out. But anyway, we can
send in our email blast, because we always send an email the day before we have a class to every kid to say this is what you need to do, so we can put that in the email blast, like, and please register your phone at the end of it or something.
Yeah.
And I'll have to check, but I doubt that we're going to be allowed to participate because of the rules that we can get. I would love
to. I've pitched it to them, so I haven't gotten a response if the PE teachers will be, but we will. If the PE teachers can even give us a list of what the kids do, we can try to work it into our program to help. Because some parents I don't know if they're going to get their kids out to do all this, whatever is going to be required for PE for the week.
So you have a total of 100 kids a day?
No, 200. It could be 200 a day.
Up to, so you can do it twice a day?
Yes, 100 each time frame.
And will the same 25 kids be participating together?
In a group. They will go by station. So these 25, we'll put 25 or 20, right. However many we have.
The following week, will the same 25 people be in
there? No, we don't know who's going to register the next week.
Yeah, it's going to be done if the parent registers.
It'll
if
be
the
all same 25.
Yeah, parents register the same 25 kids.
Yeah.
We're going to get cones, like the little soccer cones, for our 8x8. We're going to sanitize them after every day, after every 2 hours. We'll sanitize them and put them back out.
But again, if you're keeping the same grade level at the same time frame every single week, I think you have a higher probability of having the same pod of kids necessarily participating. And maybe someday you got, you know, three new kids that are coming in or something like that.
That have to add to a group. I would try to keep your groups the same as possible.
Okay.
We will do what we'll try. We
just
always
minimum. Yes.
But again, this is not CARES funding. This is just existing Parks and Rec part-time dollars that he has.
To me, why are we not doing CARES funding for this?
You know, we.
You're doing this only because of CARES, and you would not have them if we were not in school because of COVID. I mean, to me, this is a no-brainer that this is caused. You're doing this only because we're out of school because of COVID.
I wouldn't do it any other way.
You wouldn't have the availability of the kids. I'd be doing this at school. So, I mean, to me, Mariana,
So right now, unfortunately, the current thinking is that it isn't eligible. We're waiting on further direction from the Treasury. Hopefully, VML and Banco will be able to get something. We were on the phone today for quite a while trying to come up with this, and everybody's facing it right now. Banco is doing a survey of all the counties that are trying to do something for child care.
For any type of daycare.
Well, I wouldn't even call this child care. You're taking our place because of COVID, pure and simple. We're not allowed to get together with the children as a PE teacher. So, I mean, to me, this is absolutely, should be a no-brainer. The only reason he's doing this is because of COVID.
No,
the money's there. I'm glad it's there.
Yeah.
But I bet you he can find some other place to use that money.
Well, again, this doesn't start until school starts, so we can certainly keep on shaking the trees.
If you would like for me as a PE teacher, I mean, I'm one of the ones that they're helping us immensely by doing this.
Yep.
It gives the kids the opportunity to do something.
I just need to try to start hiring soon if we're going to be able to do this.
Well,
Ms. Booker?
I really admire him for Ms. Fitz for what he's done, both programs. What would be your procedure if a child has the virus? Will you just send that child home, or would you send every child that in his group that had a contact with him? How are you going to handle that situation? Let's hope it never occurs, I think you need to be prepared if it does.
Well, so let's talk about like the CDC guidelines. I mean, so one, if they're doing what they're supposed to be doing and there's no touching and they're within social distancing, let's just say hypothetically, Mr. Spitzer found out after the fact that a child tested positive, I think at most what you could do is they would maybe have to notify those parents that kids were in it and let them know, not little Johnny, you know, Johnny Smith was positive, but someone was positive in that. But at the same time, if you have students that are not in the close contact with one another, closer than, you know, possibly 10 feet for, you know, more than 10 minutes.
You're talking, yeah. Talking about children now. You're talking about children. They're going to be children. I just asked that question because I think it's something that you have to think about.
No, it's
yeah, no, we have.
It may not ever happen. That's right.
We have, because we're doing kayak classes and like water gun battles. So we would separate that child. And then if we found out, if you know, they were sick and we took the
right trip
again, we would separate them and then we would let all the parents know that have been in close contact with that child that there's a possibility that it could have happened or they could be positive.
Okay.
But the reason why I feel comfortable doing this is because we're outdoors. So we're using fresh air and I can space them out where CDC guidelines say it's comfortable.
All right.
Again, we're not asking for money, but for both of these, for Mr. Spitzer to kind of start hiring part-time staff, if the board says yes, move forward, then he'll move forward.
I think we've kind of got a nod. Ladies, how do y'all feel about that?
I think that if there is some danger to this. I talked to my daughter in St. Louis, and several of the children out there have had it. And when they go to do sports, it's really hard to keep young children away from each other.
Yes, I understand that. Yes. That's why we're trying to.
I think that's what I'm trying to say. Children aren't eight children. And I know that there are going to be a segment of children, no fault of their own, in both programs that will not benefit because they don't have transportation. Now, that doesn't mean we don't do things because we have kids that can't participate. I guess more and more we have to bring services closer to those children who live far away from the centers where we are doing these activities. And that's the reality. And but as Mrs. Eager was saying, I just still have a fear with kids. More and more children are getting this virus. And we don't know the lasting effect of this virus on kids. So I'm not saying don't do it. I just want to voice how I feel, and I wish that it'll work perfect and everybody have a wonderful time. So.
Me too, ma'am. Me too. Trust me. And we will take every precaution that we can to make sure that happens. I don't want to get sick, and I don't want my staff getting sick.
Yeah, you need to amend. Temperature checks will be required for all, including staff.
Yes, we will do them before they come in. Yes. We do that anyway. We do that when we do kayak classes. I take mine, I take Dylan's, and I take Eric's. We do it every time.
Yep. So, do you think it's a good idea, Ms. Booker?
Definitely, it's a good idea. But, you know, I was adamant about going all virtual for the school. And now I'm saying, can I say yes to a program with 200 and some kids in groups and feel that we as adults are going to be going to control that?
Ma'am, it's no more than 100 at a time.
That's
I may have to vote no on.
It's 100 at a time and 25, four groups of 25.
Yep.
So it's pretty well separated.
And that's if we have full participation. Yep. My guess was, is we'll probably be about 50.
And then we would have five groups of 10.
Yep.
Or, yeah. Or four groups of 12 or whatever.
Yeah,
it would
you
be.
Won't have full.
No, this is just what we.
I doubt if you have full participation.
Okay. Ms. Booker, so you're voting no?
Not a vote.
Or head nodded. We got to get three head nodded.
I'm going to have to vote no.
Mrs.
Egan.
I don't think this is a good idea. I think I'd have to vote no.
Well, then it's no need to ask Mr. O'Brien that. So we just.
Well, we can table it.
Well, so
we can table it for Mr. Weaver to vote on that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, since this is not an item that requires a vote, you don't have any presidential effect.
We present it.
Take it up for next meeting.
Take it up for next meeting.
We'll bring it back and we'll bring this particular.
Maybe one have, I'll try to make you feel more comfortable the next time I come back. How about that?
I sent that link for the possibility of one person being affected based on the size of the group in your particular county. I'll send that to you.
Okay.
That could be useful.
We've looked at all right. of that. Yeah. But okay. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Mr. Spencer. And so we are doing the study halls, but we're not doing the activity outside.
At this time. Or now. We're not doing it. Thank you.
Yeah.
No, we're going to bring it back up.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll bring it back up. All right. Now we'll move forward with the consent agenda. J, minutes of August 5th, 2020. Mrs. Elise. K, EMSNC, Incorporated Amendment 2, Ms. Toller. L, FY20, Social Services Supplemental Appropriation, Ms. Mabe. M, Accounts Payable Report for July of 2020, Ms. McGyver. N, FY20, Convenience Center Supplemental Appropriation, Ms. McGyver. O, CRMF, FCPS, FCHS, Cooling Tower, Mr. Striblin. T, FCPS, FY20 to FY21, FCPS, State and Federal Grant Carryover, Ms. Gill. Q, Phone System Maintenance for E911, Ms. Toller. Is there anything anyone wants to pull from the consent agenda? Okay, hearing none, do I have a motion to adopt the consent agenda?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Seeger, second by Mr. O'Brien. Ms. Seeger?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. Unfinished business.
I'm going to go through this really quick because we have other stuff.
The local allocations for Federal CARES Coronavirus Relief Fund. Yeah, we talked a bunch about this.
Yeah, I already talked to you about some of this. We're looking at some other cleaning services, duct cleaning services. The one thing I wanted to see what the board thought was, you know, we were looking at possibly offering a paid day program for Fluvanna County staff's school-age children. And I know from the school standpoint, there was a little issue with that. But again, we think we can use CARES funding for this. But again, it would only be for school-age children, and you know, parents could not be, they would have to be in the office if they want to utilize the service. And because we did a poll of staff, and there was probably about 20 staff members that may be able to utilize this.
Can you explain that? Paid day program. Does that mean the county pays for babysitters?
Yes. Yes, is Jessica on?
Normally these children would be in school, but since they are not in school, this would provide an opportunity for our employees, rather than having to stay home with their children, to still come to work.
Yep. Correct. That's the gist of it for at least nine weeks.
So I guess the question I would have is, how many of those employees, because it does seem a little self-serving, how many of those employees would actually need to be at work to perform their function?
I don't have that number right now, and like I said, you know, if the board is interested in us taking a look deeper into this, we certainly can. I don't have that information right off the top of my head. How many of them can perform their function at home versus is teleworking and not need to be in the office?
For example, would this include like the sheriff's department staff?
Yeah, I think.
How about teachers?
Well, no, this would be for county.
The schools are looking at doing something for the teachers, ma'am.
But they don't have the funds.
But right now they're closed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. Like I said, they're looking into it, trying to figure out what they might possibly do.
Yeah, so for this would be for county employees, and there would need to be some type of, you would have to have it where if you're a county employee and both parents are working, there is an opportunity for you to have a program for your child to go to. And it would have to be a school-aged child. It could be a child that's not attending school.
I could certainly see it, like we're talking about a deputy. I mean,
yeah.
Something, somebody's got to be, in a vehicle or, out present in the county, not working.
Well, I'll give you an example. Like someone in the treasurer's office, necessarily, if they're serving the public, can they do that job while they're at home? Not necessarily. So there are some positions. I mean, it's definitely, you would have to kind of look at it at a position by position level. Is it, can that employee do their function while they're on the job or not? So I mean, like I said, those are just two examples.
This has been going on for 6 months, and people have been taking care of their children and working. We haven't laid anybody off.
We have not.
Anyone.
We have not.
Yeah, so what's this, the difference now as opposed to 6 months ago?
We're actually having employees come to the offices more. I think that's a big...
Yeah, I mean, before, we had a lot of staff teleworking, and we are slowly having more staff come back, because at some point we may want to look at opening up to serve the public, because right now we're just operating under an appointment only basis for some county facilities, and there's some offices that are open up fully to the public. So it's just to provide another opportunity to perform county services and provide a benefit during this time to Fluvanna County staff. But if, it's not something that has to be decided today, it's just something we wanted to kind of get the temperature of the board on, and if the board's not interested, then we can drop it. But if you say, let's look at it a little bit more, and as Mr. O'Brien was saying, well, out of those students, can they telework versus, having the county do a program to watch their child? We can do that.
Hi, sweetheart.
I'm trying to get rid of a 2-year-old. I have some mixed feelings. I feel like I'm just negative tonight. I always got something to say about everything and may not come over very well, but you all know me. I have some mixed feelings about that. I'm riding the fence right now, and I really need to make a choice. So we got to decide on this tonight?
No.
Or
I'm just
thinking about it.
Can we ask them to go ahead and look into setting something up or check?
Just check it into it a little bit more to see if, I mean, is this something that the board is interested in providing for county staff? And if not, then we'll drop it.
Tony, what do you think?
I think it has the appearances of being a little bit self-serving, and that's problematic for me. On the other hand, for essential personnel that, you know, are stuck, I'd rather have a deputy or somebody who's critical to the functions of how the county operates and be able to work without the stress. It doesn't sound like it would be that many people that are involved, but it does, you know, it's something that a lot of citizens are struggling with as well too. So
well, and we are still looking into that option, and as finance has said, they have been on numerous things. I mean, childcare is a huge issue. Just forget county staff, sure. Just countywide. And is there a way to do that? But unfortunately, the guidance from a community standpoint versus CARES funds that come to the local government for the local government to function, there's some things that say, well, if you provide some type of child care, well then, you know, whether it's a sheriff's deputy or someone that works in the treasurer's office or maybe someone that works on a utility in the utility system, maybe there are positions that warrant it, and maybe some it makes more sense to have them telework more possibly.
Yeah.
It might be helpful if you could tell us how many people that we employ that have children of this age, and you might be able to work out a system where those who don't have children can be in the office and the others can work from home.
I would not be in favor of having children in the office.
The ones that have children stay at home, and the ones that don't have children come to work.
That's not good.
Right.
You can do the work.
Yeah, that's not good.
Well, so here's what we'll do. There's lots of questions still. We'll take a look into it more. We'll see. Of those that like I said, because we surveyed staff just to see if there was a need, as we were, and we did this previously to when everything was happening with childcare, and we will see out of those staff what type of positions they fall into, and kind of is teleworking an option, or is it not?
Well, the ones maintenance, custodial,
yep.
The water systems, the FUSD, anybody that works there, the commissioner in the treasurer's office. Their buildings are open, correct? The registrar's building is going to be open. They're going to need it. If I don't know if anybody there has that school-age children.
I don't think so.
I don't know. But if they do, they'll need it.
Yeah.
Deputies will need it. Can you think of anyone else? The health department, don't they have to be there?
The clerk's office.
The clerk's office. I mean, you know.
Anyway,
there's a lot of them.
That if we're talking about taking care of children for people who work, then why aren't we doing it for everybody? Why is it we don't have daycare centers in the schools and everywhere?
Well, because one, the schools don't want...
If the CARES money can be given...
Because one,
Mike said some of the school was looking at it.
But the schools don't want lots of children in the schools. That's the whole virtual component, but from the county. But Mrs. Booker, we understand there's a need community-wide. We're just saying there is not clear guidance that CARES funding can be used community-wide, but there is an argument that it can be provided for the local government staff.
And I also believe that's one of the reasons that Mr. Spitzer wanted to do the exercising outside is to at least give them a couple hours of break.
Yeah, but I understand Mr. O'Brien's sentiment too. You know, the self-serving, is it? I don't know. I mean, there are certainly positions that are going to that will need that because of just due to the nature of what their job is. And like I said, I don't know the makeup of those. And like I said, I'm just using 20 people because I think when I was talking to Ms. Rice, that was the rough number of employees that would need some type of program like that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it's self-serving if the argument is the only reason that person is getting it is because they want to come into work. Okay.
Yeah.
Because we should, I mean, even in this day and time, even though we're in stage two or three, you know, it's still questionable as to the benefits of being in the office versus, you know, maintaining the distancing by working from home.
Yep.
I think CDC guidelines would still say, if you can stay at home, stay at home. And so if we're making it easier for somebody not to stay at home because we're paying for their child care, I don't know that that's a you know, really our
No, I would agree with you. And the way county staff has been working, we have been, you know, a lot of county staff are still teleworking or splitting shifts. And you know, we've got some requirements in place for the amount of hours in office. But again, you know, we are still teleworking but on those days that maybe they need to be in the office because there's a function that they need to do in the office, maybe just having that program available, maybe it's one day for someone because there's a function of their job that they really need to do in office on that day. So
would that program be something that's operated out of the county's offices? Is that
it would be Parks and Rec.
It's still something to work on, bug to work out. Yeah. I think you probably would be better off going back, trying to figure out exactly what we need, what numbers are.
We'll get you more information. We'll get you more information, and that is all.
And what I hear, you're not clear that CARE money can be used for that purpose anyway, right?
No, for staff, we are clear. On the community as a whole, we are not clear.
Yeah.
So staff would be CARES.
But with staff, you can use the CARES money.
Yes, ma'am.
You can use CARES money for daycare.
Yes, ma'am.
That's in the CARES program.
Is that only until December?
Yes.
All right. I have one thing I'd like to bring up under unfinished business. It may have been taken care of, but I think she left. I just thought about this while I was sitting here. The compressor at Company 3. Mr. Hickman, do you know if we've gotten that compressor that we had the wrong compressor and they had to switch it out?
I don't know if it's been taken care of.
Okay, because it's been since June. I looked at the thing the other night. It was delivered, I think, on June 26th.
Sure.
We need to call the company and say, okay, guys, you know, it's been 2 months, and we now have those bottles in service. So we need to get that thing switched out so that if we have, heaven forbid, we have a fire in tank store, we'll have the ability to refill the tanks in tank store and not dry up with Tellmeyer to do it.
Yeah. We'll follow up with
the okay, so just I should have given you notice, but I sat down and I said, compressor.
Yep.
Because we literally, I got fussed at the other night at a fire call because of it.
Yep.
Any other unfinished business?
I have a couple of things. I got an email from the Tallies who live at 15684 West River Road in Reno.
Yeah.
And they have a question about the water line.
Yeah, I think all of that.
Okay, is there any idea what's being done about that?
Yeah,
I think all of us received that letter, and okay. I thought we took care of that month ago.
We
so Mr. Dahl probably
refresh
our memory on what we.
So if you remember, this is on the Fork Union Sanitary District, and there was Miss Tally wanted the county to. They wanted to hook up to the to the county's FSD system for no cost, and we said we were not obliged to do that. There are some unique circumstances with the water and sewer situation between the county and the tallies, and we were not of the mindset, and I discussed this with the board, not to provide a free hookup for future use. And I relayed that message to Ms. Talley, and if I need to send Ms. Talley another letter reiterating that fact, I can do that.
I believe it is.
Well, she said in her email that she has submitted a $4,520 check.
She did.
That the county's holding.
She would, no, the county would give it back to her, but she wanted us to hold on to the check. She wanted to hook up to the water system. She submitted things, she submitted the cost for the water system hookup, and then sometime after the fact, after she submitted it, she then discussed about getting a free hookup. And we said, well, we were not going to do that.
Well, then I think you need to write her a letter and give her a check back.
We told her we would give her a check back, and she's like, no, we won't. Hold on.
You know.
I will give her a check back.
You know, yeah, but you know, when I read that email, I also interpreted as, and Ms. Eager, I think you may be thinking on this line, that she's saying, you all have my $4,500 check, but you haven't put the water holes. You haven't put the water over here. So I think we need to have, we need to talk to have a conversation with her and say, are you saying that you're ready for us to put the water over to your house? They have to go under the highway. I think it's a very difficult thing to do. I've read it that that's what she was saying.
Mr. Dahl, maybe what needs to happen is you need to get in contact with Ms. Talley and then maybe Ms. Booker, since that's your district. Get the two of them mm-hmm. over and see if y'all can't figure this thing out, because I think what Mr. Dahl's saying is she gave the check, then asked them for a free hookup. And when they said, we'll give you a check back because we're not giving you a free hookup, she said, hold on to the check. Maybe we just need to clarify things a little bit more.
I think she was saying that something would be worked out, but in the circumstance, it wasn't hold the check. But I will contact Ms. Talley tomorrow, and I will get clarification on if she wants her check back, and we would be happy to send her a check back.
Okay. Because
I have sat with her and been involved in this. So right now, Eric, you can do what you said you were going to do. Excuse me, Ms. Eager, for talking over you.
I have another question. This is from a man who needs to get rid of old paint. And he says that Vanderlyn no longer will take paint, and neither will the landfill. But he's found that Rivanna Waste Authority is having a hazardous waste days on September 11th and 12th. And when he contacted them, they said that they would take it, but Fluvanna citizens would need a voucher to get rid of the paint. And he asked, would Fluvanna be willing to participate in providing vouchers?
Oh, they want Fluvanna to chip in some funding for their program.
Now he said he's willing to pay for whatever it costs for Rivanna. So I'm not sure what kind of voucher he's talking about.
Maybe we need to reach out to Rivanna.
Rivanna Waste Authority?
Yeah, and see exactly what they're talking about, because I'm not really quite sure what they're talking about by needing a voucher.
Okay. Do you have somebody who's willing to do that?
Contact them? Oh yeah, we'll contact them, and we can find out on what they exactly are talking about. Mr. Spitzer, when are we planning on doing ours?
Well, the company we do ours with currently says they are not doing anything this year. Okay. So I put a carryover request in to do it in April of 2021.
Okay.
daycare have tried to carry the money over from this previous year that we couldn't do it because of COVID for next year.
Yep.
So that's my plan.
Yep. Mrs. Eager, we will reach out to Rivanna Waste to see what they mean regarding a voucher for a Fluvanna County citizen to see what that exactly means.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yep, and then I will follow up with you to get the once we get the information to follow up with whoever the citizen is that's inquiring.
Okay.
All right.
That's all. Business I have.
And just one thing, I apologize. I have some VDOT updates that I know Mrs. Eager and I think maybe Mr. Sheridan, you asked before. I don't have them with me right now, but Bethel did give me some updates on some questions previously. I'll have to bring them for the next board meeting. Or if it's specific to you, I can just reach out and let you know. Or I can send an email to the board letting you know what was said. But I don't remember what they are right now.
Okay.
As soon as you find something, just shoot us.
Yeah, I'll shoot you an email.
All right. So that's the end of unfinished business. Is there any new business?
I just forwarded, I mentioned this earlier about, staying on top of the changes and what we're doing with the registrar's office. There's also changes that the governor's office is proposing in special session, including drop boxes and so on. So just under, the sort of notice of, I think the county should try to do as much as possible to stay on top of those changes so that we can make elections as free and fair as possible in the county of Fluvanna. I'm passing that along. It's not new business, not actionable yet, but it's stuff that we need to pay attention to.
Yeah, the drop boxes, I mean, those were things that were specifically allowable in the CARES funding that she received as far as, putting drop boxes out there. And I'm not sure about, if you're talking like throughout the community or just outside in front of the registrar's office.
I mean, I think that's one of the things that we need to consider and work with the registrar's office to see what she needs there. Because obviously throughout the community is probably better than just there. But there's security involved.
There's security.
That would be my own.
That's what it specifically addresses, measure the security.
If you put something out in the community and all of a sudden,
so maybe at the local post office. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, no,
the registrar's job, I guess. So
there's requirements that she has or does not have, and we can ask her about those.
All righty. Any other new business? Hearing none, I will now open the second round of public comments. Anyone wish to address the board, please keep your comments 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Does anyone wish to speak at this time? Ms. Harris?
No.
Ms. Harris, give me a head shake. No. I will now close the second round of public comment. Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1, Personnel Matters, Section 2.2-3711A5, Respective Industry, Section 2.2-3711A6, Investment of Funds of the Code of Virginia, you have amended for the purpose of discussing personnel, prospective industry, investment funds.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Eager. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We are now in closed session.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting, other than the NATS.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Eager. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
She's already gone.
Ms. Booker?
One little aye.
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We are now out of closed session. Do I have a motion to extend?
So made.
To midnight.
Midnight.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Eager. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So made.
Do I have a second?
Go ahead, Moselle.
Got a motion made by Mr. O'Brien?
Second.
Okay. Motion seconded by Ms. Booker five times. Ms. Zeger?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We now adjourn.